This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Spoiler number one is Dr. Lee Franz. It stinks.
What is going on? What is going on?
Episode 42, Submission 208, The Dana Carvey Show. The Dana Carvey Show aired on ABC from March 12th of 1996 to April 30th of 1996 for 8 episodes, one of which was unaired.
From the ABC Broadcast Center in New York, it's the Pepsi Stuff Dana Carvey Show.
Well, guys, the spring of 1996 was a year of transition at the American Broadcasting Company. Disney had just purchased the parent company of the American Broadcasting Company, Capital Cities. And that year in 96, they had some entries that we'll be covering on this show in the future, like Aliens in the Family and Muppets Tonight in the Dave Chappelle sitcom Buddies. Also in 1996, you had a sketch comedy show, but the sketch comedy show was hosted by a guy who was one of the driving forces of Saturday Night Live in the late 80s and early 90s, Dana Carvey.
And interestingly enough, after he left Saturday Night Live, he almost got the late night TV gig that Letterman vacated when he went to the Late Show to CBS.
Yes.
It was going to actually be co-produced by Dana Carvey and some kid named Conan O'Brien.
Whatever
the rest
happened.
Is history.
Whatever. Wait a minute. Conan O'Brien, is that the guy who was playing bongos in that episode with Wayne Gretzky?
Yeah, he's the guy that wrote the famous Marge versus the Monorail episode of The Simpsons.
Oh, man. I wonder, whatever happened to that guy?
There was a sketch comedy show on ABC, and it had this incredible group of people behind it. And they were just going to revolutionize the game, just really give it what for.
And if you see the list of names associated with this show.
Oh, my God. Run it down, man. Run it down.
It's like a who's who of comedy for like the last quarter century. Should we start with the actors or the writers?
Let's start with the actors first.
Okay. Well, we have Dana Carvey. We all know who he is. We talked about him briefly. You also had some young gentleman named Steve Carell.
Never heard of him.
I figured you'd say that. And another young gentleman named Stephen Colbert.
Never heard of him.
Again, saw that coming from a mile away. And then you had Bob Odenkirk.
Yes.
Okay, you've heard of him.
Mr. Show, and of course...
Yeah, Mr. Show, absolutely, yeah.
And today with Better Call Saul.
Yep.
And also, again, another name that we're all very familiar with, Robert Smigel.
Yes.
Yeah, for all the stuff he's done on SNL over the years, and also with, again, Conan O'Brien. Absolutely.
Yep.
And then from the writing perspective, oh my gosh, again, tons of great writers. Louis C.K., and you had Dino Stamatopoulos.
Yep, he of Moral Oral fame.
Among other things.
Yep.
He also did stuff with Late Show with David Letterman, Late Night with Conan O'Brien, Mad TV, the aforementioned Mr. Show. But also, entry for next week. Yes, next week we're going to talk about this show, TV Funhouse.
Yep, Comedy Central's TV Funhouse.
Yes. Then you had Spike Ferriston.
He of Talk Show with Spike Ferriston. Also, a writer for Seinfeld.
Yes, and Letterman. So, yeah, again, somebody who's been very successful in the business.
You have Greg Daniels, who wrote for The Simpsons, King of the Hill, and was involved with the American version of The Office.
Okay. Yeah. Also have John Glazer. This was actually his first job, and you know he's gone on to do a lot of big things. For example, Delocated, Neon Joe Werewolf Hunter, and he was also on the writing team of Late Night with Conan O'Brien, and now he's on the True TV series John Glazer Loves Gear. Oh, he was also on Parks and Rec, Girls, and Inside Amy Schumer.
And also, John Glazer was in the Too Close for Comfort episode of Future Entry, the greatest event in television history.
You also had Robert Carlock, who produced 30 Rock and also co-created a little show called The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Stay alive, damn it!
Now available on DVD and Blu-ray through Mill Creek.
So needless to say, there was a ton of great people behind this show. So how did it fail?
Yeah, Mike, how did this fail? It sounds like a winner.
This has everything it needs to be completely awesome.
Yeah. Well, we'll start off with the first sketch on the premiere episode. And the first sketch on the premiere episode had to deal with then-president at the time, Bill Clinton, declaring that he was mother and father to the nation. And this included him ripping open his suit, his shirt, and showing a prosthetic chest full of nipples. And from those nipples came out milk. And if you look carefully while watching this premiere sketch, you could see milk coming from the bottom of his jacket, dripping out. And he was feeding puppy dogs and even a kitty cat and a baby doll. He was the mother and father to our country. That's a little absurd. Plus, also, there were even S&P issues, standards and practices issues, where they wanted to pixelate the nipples. Ultimately, it was decided that the network wouldn't have to pixelate the nipples. They showed it unedited. That's sort of a bizarre way to introduce your show. A little absurd.
Well, this whole show was an exercise in the theater of the absurd. I mean, you could call it the American sort of descendant of Monty Python and maybe even the predecessor to the Mighty Boosh, even.
In some ways, I could agree with that. But also, at the same time, this aired at 9:30 on Tuesday nights, and it aired after probably the biggest show on TV in the early 90s, with all due respect to Seinfeld, Home Improvement.
Yeah, and the Home Improvement audience is a way different animal than the audience the Dana Carvey Show was trying to attract.
Indeed, and you still had kids watching at this time, thinking it's like a transition into staying into family time, and by no means was this necessarily a family show, or at least family-oriented show.
He even mentioned it as such in the opening monologue. This was a show for all the boomers who really enjoyed absurdist, avant-garde, counterculture humor. Which now watching back, I could totally appreciate. But back when I was a little chica watching this, I was like, okay, some of it's really cool. The other parts is like,
well, speaking about just the absurdist humor, there was a documentary on Hulu called Too Funny to Fail regarding this show. And they showed an ad which ABC had aired at the time promoting Home Improvement and the Dana Carvey Show. And in retrospect, it's a little shocking. I think that would be a good word to use. The episode of Home Improvement that was being promoted would be classified as one of those very special episodes.
Yes, it was the episode where Randy, Jonathan Taylor Thomas's character, might have thyroid cancer.
Yeah. You can go over the gist of it on Funny or Die's very special episode. It's right there.
But the ad itself, here it is. Just listen to how weird the transition sounds to go from the very special episode of Home Improvement to the Diet Mug Root Beer Dana Carvey Show.
I had never watched Home Improvement when I heard about the time slot. I thought, oh, well, maybe it'll be compatible because Tim Allen's kind of a man's man kind of guy. And seemed like maybe he's a hip comedian. He'd been busted for cocaine or something. I don't know. Is Home Improvement a little racy maybe, right?
I get your point now, Tim. You respect me, huh?
I hadn't watched it until about four shows in. I just stopped everything at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday and watched it and just watched in horror, just not believing what we had foisted on this audience.
ABC Tuesday, a parent's worst fear, losing a child.
I don't want to die, Dad.
You never know whose family it will happen to. An episode so powerful, it hits home.
We'll beat this thing, no matter what it is, you know. I'm not letting anything happen to you.
A special Home Improvement followed by the Diet Mug Root Beer Dana Carvey Show.
What can you say? I mean, that just says it all. That just says it all. What were we doing?
It was being marketed as this kind of fun show. And I think people were like, what the fuck is this?
And I thought about what we had put on television following this family-oriented show that I now realized was successful because kids and parents could watch it together. You know, and then our show would start and kids and parents would, you know, run for their lives.
That whole show is just like, fuck you, Dad.
I'm not Home Improvement, all right? Fuck you, I like Grandma the Clown, all right? You might not get it, but that's because that's your deal, all right? That's you, that's on you.
And my dad, of course, is like, I don't like Home Improvement either. Why are you yelling at me?
And mind you, this is another time we wish this was a video podcast. If you could just see Stephen Colbert's face when he saw this, aghast is a great word to use, but I think there's even better words to use. I mean, you could see his jaw hit the floor. Are you kidding? That actually happened? That was a promo? Yes, it was.
Man, guys, it's too bad Ernie Anderson was near the end of his life because I would have loved to have heard him try to seriously go into that to the Diet Mug Root Beer Dana Carvey Show.
And the thing of it is, that's not even the Diet Mug Root Beer would be episode 4, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah, Diet Mug Root Beer was episode 4, yes. We talked earlier about the talent that was actually on the show. But the list of people who didn't make it on the show, who weren't hired, is just about as big, right?
Yes, Mike. Anna Gasteyer was one name who auditioned. She'd go on to SNL, I think, what was it, 96,
97, I believe.
Okay, oh yeah, because 95, 96, yeah, Ferrell and all those guys were already on there.
Anna Gasteyer wouldn't come for another year.
Okay.
After that.
Lewis Black.
Can you imagine how good this show would have been with Lewis Black? Oh my gosh.
Oh,
just the possibilities.
Oh, by the way, Lewis Black, Tar Heel in the House.
Of course.
Yeah. And he, of course, he would go on to be a regular on The Daily Show and a fixture on the stand-up circuit, so you know, he did good.
Yeah, a correspondent on The Daily Show like Stephen Colbert and Steve Carell.
Tracy Morgan.
Of course, he also went on to Saturday Night Live, I believe, same year that Anna Gasteyer joined up.
Yep, that's 90, correct, yes. 96, 97.
And, of course, he was on 30 Rock.
Yep. And there was a little 20-year-old kid from Long Island that auditioned, Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon. I remember watching David Carvey documentary on Hulu, and the story was that Louis C.K. hated this guy, absolutely hated him, and he basically said, "I'm going to quit if you hire this guy." Could not stand him. Out of nowhere, he said all of this on the couch of The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon.
Not awkward.
Not awkward at all.
Well, Jimmy Fallon got the last laugh.
Yep.
He's doing okay for himself, too.
To say the least, yes.
So the first six episodes of this show, in an attempt by Dana Carvey to replicate the variety shows of his youth, would have a different sponsor in each show. And there's a common theme, guys, in episodes 1 through 5.
Yes, there were.
Yeah.
They're all affiliated with Yum Brands.
Or they all would be affiliated with Yum Brands, because if I'm not mistaken, that's like, how new is Yum Brands?
Well, at the very least, let's just say they're associated with PepsiCo.
Yeah.
Because at the time, I don't think Yum Brands was necessarily around in 1996. And I don't think Pepsi falls under the Yum brand. That would be more your Taco Bell, your KFC, your Pizza Hut.
Okay. But the first episode was the Taco Bell Dana Carvey show. The second episode was the Mug Root Beer Dana Carvey show. The third episode was the Mountain Dew Dana Carvey show. The fourth episode was the aforementioned Diet Mug Root Beer Dana Carvey show. The fifth show was, and man, this is going to take me back, the Pepsi Stuff Dana Carvey show. Remember Pepsi Stuff, guys?
Vaguely.
I remember Pepsi Stuff. I remember opening up the newspaper on a Sunday morning in 1996, and the Pepsi Stuff catalog fell out of the circular pile, so... Yeah.
And then episode 6, the sponsor was a Chinese restaurant from Manhattan called Szechuan Dynasty. And it was the Szechuan Dynasty Dana Carvey show.
Which, after doing a little bit of research, it looks like it closed up in late 2015.
Aww. I want to go. I would have liked to have gone to restaurants just to say I went to the Chinese restaurant that sponsored the Dana Carvey show.
And then episode 7 and the unaired episode, they didn't have a sponsor. That was just the Dana Carvey show. But also, after the PepsiCo sponsorship ended, so this is starting on episode 6, the backdrop behind Dana Carvey when he did his monologue changed. It went from geometric figures, and usually there was a caricature of Dana Carvey drinking or eating the product that was sponsoring that show. So it might have been Mountain Dew, or it might have been Pepsi, or Taco Bell. But starting with episode 6, it became a skyline of New York City, or yep, sort of New York City.
Maybe cartoonish like New York City.
Yeah, I mean, there was no Twin Towers, though. It was sort of like a neighborhood in New York City. No big buildings. But it's just very interesting, talking about the Pepsi sponsorship. Shortly after the show debuted, PepsiCo announced that it pulled the advertising for the show, which would have brought in $600,000 per episode. There's your big bucks right there.
Yeah.
But interesting also regarding these episodes, at least the six sponsored episodes, including the Szechuan Dynasty episode, just about every episode started with a musical number about the product. And they'd have occasionally people dressed in costumes looking like a taco or a bell or wearing merchandise of that sponsor. And they'd sing a song. Here's an example of one of the songs that was sung after the opening credits, but before Dana Carvey was introduced.
Pepsi is chock full of vitamins, chock full of minerals, high in fiber and electrolytes. Pepsi repels mosquitoes, will lower the crime rate, brings old people back to life. When you drink a Pepsi, you can understand what elephants say to other elephants. If you're taking a cab and you need some change, you can ask Pepsi, it'll loan you a dollar. Cause Pepsi likes everyone, except for its father. They've had a bad relationship, but nobody's perfect. Before you judge Pepsi, look in the mirror. When was the last time you called your dad? Now here's our host with the most, Dana Carvey.
Now that we've talked briefly about the Dana Carvey Show itself, we're going to take a look at the episodes. We're going to start with episode one, which we mentioned was called the Taco Bell Dana Carvey Show. We mentioned the initial scene about Bill Clinton being mother and father to the nation with the prosthetic nipples and feeding cats and dogs. A little absurd to start the show. And then every show had a monologue, except it really wasn't a monologue. It just wasn't that funny, in my opinion. The one exception to the monologues not being so good, in my opinion, happened on the last aired episode, episode 7, when in the audience was Regis Philbin, and essentially Regis Philbin and Dana Carvey had a Regis Philbin off.
Oh, yeah. That was just, you know, him. It was just, they were just riffing back and forth. Not really, yeah.
Well, they're just, again, it was Regis and Dana trying to out-Regis each other. Then after the monologue, there was a segment which occurred, I think, maybe two or three times during the series called Leftover Beatles Memories, which I think was just an excuse for Dana Carvey to do his Paul McCartney impression.
But also, Mike, remember that the year earlier on ABC, they had the Beatles Anthology, and that was like a big hit for ABC.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. I remember that. I remember getting my mother that book for Christmas that year. Yes.
I had the CD.
Yes. And then this
Hold up. I wanted to mention, you also had Stephen Colbert as George Harrison, and you had Smigel as Ringo.
And Smigel as Ringo was good. Ringo was really good.
It was an epic. I mean, you had Stephen Colbert riffing on the fact that George Harrison, not really liked among the Beatles fans, or sort of forgotten. He was the quiet Beatle. He was the quiet Beatle for a reason. And then you had Paul McCartney. He's talking, doing the hip and the hop and the bip and the bop and all that. And nobody understood the thing he said, although he perfectly understood what he said. Something like that. And then you had Ringo just sleeping.
But also you have, on episode one of the recurring bits of the show, Dana and Steve Carell as the stupid pranksters.
Oh, yeah. That was one of those meta... That became one of those meta recurring bits.
You know, I'm going to say it, and I hate to say it. It was funny the first two times, and it was funny the last time. We'll get to that in a little bit. But unfortunately, after you see the first two times, you're like, okay, we know how this is going to end. And the first one was at a drive-thru. The stupid pranksters went through the drive-thru. They ordered food. And, you know, commonly what would happen with pranksters is they'd, you know, dash before the food came. But they went through the drive-thru, they paid for the food, and while the person at the register was getting the food, they left. That's why they're stupid pranksters.
Yeah.
Then you had Nightline checking in with the Republican Party. You do need to remember that 1996 was an election year, and they really came down hard on Bob Dole.
I think they nailed all of it. Bob Dole was like, Bob Dole. And then you had Steve Forbes, who was like, I just want to take this opportunity to thank all my money. And then you had Pat Buchanan, like, this is a still beating live heart of a Mexican immigrant. Watch me eat it.
All the pundits said we were dead. I'm sorry I'm doing Steve Forbes again, but I thought I would.
Go ahead.
And I couldn't have done it without my wonderful money. Let's hear it for my money. And then he's just hugging a giant bag full of money, Steve Forbes.
And then you had a spoof commercial for Drowsy Boy. Not Lazy Boy, Drowsy Boy.
It's the recliner that acts as a robotic body, a robotic exosuit.
Yes, think Transformers, but with furniture. And then after the Drowsy Boy commercial, Nightline checked back in with the Republican Party. And we do have to add that Dana Carvey did Ted Koppel, and did Ted Koppel really well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then another segment, which
Wait. Hold okay. on. I want to mention the best part. Steve Forbes is now drinking some cocoa.
And then after Nightline checked back in with the Republican Party, we had Germans Who Say Nice Things, which, again, absurdist humor. I didn't find it terribly funny. It was basically Dana Carvey and Steve Carell dressed as typical German people with loud German accents saying stuff. Again, I didn't find it terribly funny. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's the German side of me.
I wouldn't know.
Well, I'm German and I found it hilarious.
I'm not German, so couldn't tell you. Well,
I'm only a quarter German, so maybe that explains it. Maybe if I was at least half German, maybe I'd get it.
And then we go back to the stupid pranksters at a gas station.
Who knew gas was that expensive back then? It was $30. I want to put $30 in on this pump.
Well, they were driving in one of those old-time El Caminos, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but still, I mean, gas back in 1996 was probably about like $1.29, $1.39 a gallon. So, yeah, I don't think they were filling up a 25-gallon tank. Not on an El Camino, at least.
Wow, true.
Okay, just one of those random observations that I saw that while watching the show.
This has been another random observation.
And then you had an important announcement.
Yeah, this was Robert Smigel playing the executive vice president in charge of entertainment for ABC, basically saying, hey, I know all of Dana Carvey's characters are basically the property of NBC, but guess what? We've just been bought out by Disney, and now with their high-priced lawyers, not only do we have all of their characters, but we also have CBS's Late Show Top 10 and Larry Bud Melman.
Yes, with an appearance by Larry Bud Melman. And the thing is, at that time, he would have been Calvert DeForest on The Late Show. So it's interesting seeing him go back to his name, which was popularized on Late Night. But then that takes us to the Church Ladies Top 10 list. And I got to tell you, they were almost mean towards Princess Di, because there were a couple of skits on this show where they went after Princess Di mercilessly. And you got to remember that this is right when
she divorced Charles.
Oh yeah, this is right when she divorced Charles, but also this is about a year and a half before she passed away.
Yeah.
And the Church Lady's top 10 list had to do with nicknames for Lady Di. And a lot of them included the word slut. Let's just say that.
I am not at liberty to even repeat that, but.
Well, I'm just telling the truth. I saw it and. That's an unfair characterization, I think, but. Again, also the timing, you know, she'd passed less than a year and a half later. I don't know, just didn't make me feel too good watching it. But obviously that was a big topic at the time, the splitting of Charles and Di. Well, that was episode one. Episode two.
The Mug Root Beer Dana Carvey Show.
Not to be confused with the Diet Mug Root Beer Dana Carvey Show.
Yes, we want to get that straight.
One of the recurring segments on the Dana Carvey Show was their version of ET, Entertainment Tonight, which they called EH, Entertainment Headlines.
Yeah.
Yes. And the opening of the show featured an Entertainment Headlines examination of the OJ prosecutors, Marcia Clark and Christopher Darden. And basically, they fell in love after the trial. Or fell in love during the trial. And true love came out of that.
I didn't see that part in American Crime Story. What the hell?
Well, stuff had to be left on the cutter room floor.
We gotta get you dressed, Juice.
And then we have the show open and monologue. Again, pretty much Q&A, nothing too spectacular. And then they had an ad for Comedy Central's Under Five. And what that was stand-up comedy done by five-year-olds or younger. And I was impressed because for that ad, they actually got Penn Jillette, who, if you remember back in the day,
was
the voice of Comedy Central.
Yeah, yep. You couldn't, back in the day, in the early mid-90s, you couldn't turn on Comedy Central for 20 minutes without hearing Penn Jillette's voice.
And then after that, and this is another segment which happened, I think, once or twice besides this. They did a takeoff of the Charles Grodin Show, which, if you remember, back in the mid to late 90s, was a thing on CNBC. Charles Grodin did have like a 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. talk show. And never did I think anybody would ever do a Charles Grodin impersonation. Yet here we are. And he did remind me of the Charles Grodin Show. I didn't necessarily watch it religiously, but I did see episodes of it. And he had like the general mannerisms of Charles Grodin down. And what he'd mentioned on the show. I mean, it was a good, accurate parody of the Charles Grodin Show, even though, you know, of all the shows that were around in 1996, let's do a parody of Charles Grodin? Really?
Well, it was one of those examples of the show being too smart for the room.
Well, the Charles Grodin Show was too smart for the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and that's not on the list yet. Keyword yet.
The Charles Grodin Show.
And then you had the Hockey Perfectionist.
But Steve Carell is a goalie.
Yes, and Steve Carell was like blocking everything. I remember him taking a hockey stick to a remote controlled truck, and basically after he hit it, the truck hit the wall, and the truck just broke apart into hundreds of pieces. And then Entertainment Headlines looked at Oliver Stone.
Oh yeah, isn't this the sketch where they have Oliver Stone and he's doing like a film about the George Washington snorting coke?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Cuz you got to remember back in the day Oliver Stone did the films JFK and also Nixon,
which we'll get to speaking of Nixon later.
Yes. And then I think this is the only appearance of this during this series, but obviously it went on to bigger and better things. The Ambiguously Gay Duo premiered.
Yes, it was the It Takes Two to Tango, and I believe that short also aired on the first TV Funhouse. I may be wrong there, but yeah.
I think you're right.
Then it's back to more Charles Grodin and more leftover Beatles memories. And then Celebrity Bloopers and Dark Sides.
Featuring Paul Hogan and Casey Kasem.
Yep. Paul Hogan was really upset about having to do a third Crocodile Dundee movie. And Casey Kasem was really upset about having to dedicate a song to a dog.
Yes.
If you've ever heard the outtake from American Top 40, which does exist, by the way, imagine an exaggerated version of that.
Ponderous, effing ponderous.
You're pretty much right on the nose there, absolutely. And that was the end of episode 2.
Yeah. Episode 3, The Mountain Dew Dana Carvey Show.
And also in this episode, you have a special guest star.
Yes, you do.
Bill Hartman was the special guest star in episode 3.
Mm-hmm. So, he would play Larry King in a sketch about Larry King Live, where Dana would resurrect his Ross Perot.
Because Ross Perot was known for going on Larry King Live at the time to announce anything and everything.
Yeah, he announced that he was basically announcing that he wasn't going to be running for president. Except that he wasn't. And now I've gone all cross-eyed. And that was after an Academy Awards sketch.
Where a bunch of farm animals were pissed that Braveheart won Best Picture instead of Babe.
Yeah. And the monologue and the ingredients of Mountain Dew diving into the Mountain Dew can.
Very educational. Yeah.
Very weird also.
Science.
And next, the 11 o'clock news that's easy to take.
This is where we start to see the shades of Colbert that we would come to know and love, and that is delivering humorous news with a straight face.
Yes, especially when he had all sorts of pets around him, a parakeet on his shoulder, holding a what looked like a golden retriever puppy dog. Yes.
And next we go to Mountain Dew looks like.
It looks like liquid sunshine.
Yep.
That's exactly what it looks like. It looks like nothing but liquid sunshine.
And then Bob Dole's announcement of a vice presidential running mate.
Strom Thurmond, in an attempt to make Bob Dole look more youthful. Bob Dole is younger than his running mate. Bob Dole is in touch with youth. Bob Dole.
Who the heck knew that Dana Carvey could do a Strom Thurmond impersonation?
No clue. And then perhaps the most racist sketch ever to come from this series.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, yes. Because Dana Carvey doing Strom Thurmond wasn't racist enough.
Well, never mind what I have to think about Strom Thurmond. Susan Sarandon and Gregory Peck present the Foreign Language Academy Award.
And let's just say the racism meter is going off the chart.
Yeah.
Lots of stereotyping. Yeah.
It's,
I'm feeling yucky just thinking about it.
Yeah. This would not fly in 2020. But in 1996, it just flew under the radar. Probably because nobody was watching it by then. I don't know.
But if you think that was cringe, wait till you get to the next segment. Grandma the Clown.
Oh, dear.
You have this old lady who's a clown in a TV show with kids, and she's, like, walking very slowly with a walker, and the walker is making these slow honking sounds.
Mm-hmm.
It is just bizarre and weird.
And a little bit icky. Just a little bit.
And it was a recurring segment because it will pop up later. But then we get to the Diet Mug Root Beer Dana Carvey show. The episode we mentioned earlier that followed the very special Home Improvement.
And we get to one of my favorite skits from the show.
Oh, there are a number of good skits on this show.
But this might be
the episode I like most out of all of them.
But this is my favorite, because you have a Regis and Kathy Lee sketch, and you have Jan Hooks as Kathy Lee in this episode. But the best part is Regis gets a call from David Letterman asking, can he do a sketch to be in the potato suit where he dives into a kiddie pool of gravy? So he's got a so Dana Carvey as Regis has to run to the Ed Sullivan Theater because he's got to be in the mashed potatoes suit.
Yeah, but then he scales the wall, and who do you see pop his head out? Tony Randall.
Oh yes, Tony Randall. Because of course Tony Randall was always on Letterman all the time.
Yes, and he went up however many stories. And ended up in the writer's room, climbed through the window of the writer's room. I gotta do this for David! And you see him enter the theater wearing the mashed potato suit, and then ultimately run up on stage and dive into the vat of gravy.
Oh.
And also, another thing is, and you brought this to my attention, Greg, who played Gelman in that sketch?
Oh, Stephen Colbert.
Oh, that was that was amazing. That was glorious.
That all my dreams to see Stephen Colbert play Gilman. Oh, my God.
And then after that, you had probably just as good of a sketch. Geraldo interviewing Cato Kaelin, and then O.J. Simpson came by. And Geraldo was actually done by Elon Gold, who... Really, in some of the episodes, he was absolutely hilarious. And he didn't really go on that much after this show. He did a great Geraldo. We'll talk about him in a moment in another sketch. And you had Dana Carvey as Cato Kaelin. Again, I thought this is maybe about as good as the Regis and Kathy Lee sketch. And then after that, you get Germans Who Say Nice Things Again. But then you had Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton getting roasted. It was like, what would you say? Like the old
Dean Martin roast, only Howard Stern was involved.
Well, I was thinking more like the White House Correspondents' Dinner also.
Yeah, that too.
It was a little bit of both of those. And the big star of the show was Howard Stern, again played by Elon Gold. He did a heck of a Stern.
He did.
And that was, again, given that this aired immediately after the very special episode of Home Improvement, the subject material was just a little touchy. Not appropriate for 9:30 after the Home Improvement special episode.
Yeah.
And then we wrap up with more Germans Who Say Nice Things. Again, they're finding mileage out of this. I just don't see it.
Well, they found mileage out of the stupid pranksters. They can find mileage out of anything.
But the stupid pranksters was funny a couple of times. And then once we get to the last one was absolutely hilarious. But now we get to episode 5, the Pepsi Stuff Dana Carvey show. It starts with Jay Leno interviewing Quentin Tarantino. You had Dana Carvey playing Jay Leno. And you had Robert Smigel as Quentin Tarantino. The two of them talking alerted dogs. It sounded like high-pitched squeals or something like that. Because you know how Jay Leno talks, as much as we dislike it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, Jay Leno, reason Gabrielle Union got fired,
And ultimately, again, dogs were howling over this, going crazy. But then it set off radars at like NORAD or something like that. And they started bombing Burbank. Ultimately, with Jay Leno and Quentin Tarantino still doing the noises like Greg mentioned, that high-pitched squealing almost, despite debris all around him, dust all around him. Too bad the bomb missed Jay Leno. No, I said it.
Yeah.
Don't send letters.
We're not even going to retract it.
Nope. And then you had the show open slash monologue with the singing and dancing of four people dressed in Pepsi gear. And again, the Q&A that we talked about that Dana Carvey would do. And then there was a fake commercial. This I found kind of funny. A companion finding service for the insane.
Ooh.
That was funny.
That was funny.
It was basically like Great Expectations, if you will, like a dating service, but it was for homeless people who talk to themselves and mumble and creep out people. So they'd pair up two people that do that. So when they go down the street and they're mumbling to each other incoherently, it looked like they're actually having a conversation or talking. I really thought that was a funny commercial.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
And then the stupid pranksters went to a movie theater, and they did the same thing. We'd like to buy two tickets to go see whatever movie. That'll be $13. Okay, here's the money. And they dash without going to the movie, laughing like idiots. Again, it got a little repetitive here.
I should note, did you notice who played the ticket taker?
Who played the ticket taker?
Louis C.K. Oh.
He also played the guy in, I believe that he would show up either on this episode or next, but we'll get to it when we get to it. Please continue.
And then there was a sketch called Rich Little's All Rich Little One Man Easter Promo. And I think that's the first time in my life I've ever seen somebody do an impersonation of Rich Little.
Yeah, because it's like, honestly, it's like, how can you impersonate Rich Little? The man impersonates everybody. Has anyone ever heard his real voice?
But then you had Dana Carvey impersonating Rich Little, impersonating a bunch of celebrities during this promo. You had Dana Carvey impersonating Rich Little, impersonating Paul Lynde. You had Dana Carvey impersonating Rich Little, impersonating Carol Channing. You had Dana Carvey impersonating Rich Little, impersonating Truman Capote. I mean, it went all over the place. But it sounded like something that Rich Little would do, because that seems like what his Las Vegas gig would be nowadays. Oh, and by the way, Chico, next time we're in Vegas at the Tropicana, we've got to see Rich Little.
We're going to see Rich Little.
Darn right we are.
We got to see Rich Little do an impersonation of Dana Carvey doing an impersonation of Rich Little.
Screw playing blockbusters. We're going to see Rich Little. And then the next segment, this was a great one. Waiters who are nauseated by food.
This was the sketch that reportedly got Stephen Colbert hired onto The Daily Show. Carell hired on The Daily Show.
Yes.
So basically Stephen Colbert and Steve Carell's careers are basically made from this sketch.
Basically.
And what a great sketch it was. It was just Stephen Colbert and Steve Carell as two waiters, and they're reading off the specials that are being offered at a restaurant. And once they mention food, they start getting sick. They start feeling queasy and nauseous.
And I believe the inspiration for that sketch Stephen Colbert talks about in the Dana Carvey Too Funny to Fail Hulu documentary is back when he was a waiter in Chicago, when he was with Second City, he would do like a sketch for like his fellow waiters of reading off the menu and being nauseated.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just funny. And the thing is, when they got to anything that wasn't food, like just water, for example, they were just fine. But once they went back to food,
Oh boy, yeah.
And then there was a quick little 15-second segment, meanwhile at Fabio's house, which had Dana Carvey as Fabio, bare-chested. Now, mind you, it was a prosthetic bare chest, very hairy one, and all he was doing was shaving his hair.
Too bad this wasn't a couple of years later when that goose hit Fabio in the nose.
Never forget Apollo's chariot, the Fabio ride.
And then, do it, Greg.
Nixon's. This was the zippers of the Dana Carvey show.
Oh no.
But this is a spoof on the Oliver Stone movie Nixon. But instead of one Nixon, you have four Nixons.
Well, ultimately there are five Nixons because one of them was somebody wearing a Richard Nixon mask.
Yes.
Very bizarre, very funny though.
Was it also one of them supposed to be Rich Little portraying Richard Nixon?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was.
Yes. So you have double Dana Carvey doing Rich Little on this show.
And then you have the stupid pranksters again. But now they call the prostitute.
Oh, that's not going to end well.
Well, it's just like the other stupid pranksters. They give the money to the prostitute. She's getting ready. And while she goes in the bathroom prepping, they leave, giggling on the way out. Again, same thing we've seen in the previous stupid pranksters skits. Just lather, rinse, repeat. Put them in a different situation. They give the money. They dash. They go in their El Camino, and they're laughing all the way home. I mean, again, it's funny the first couple times, but it's very redundant after you see it the first two times. And then, a BBC report on the separation of England's royal couple. Again, yeah, let's take attack on Princess Di and Charles. I believe this is the, in that skit, that they ended up doing like a Herman's Hermit spoof.
Yeah, that was the because they wanted
to bring back decapitation. They wanted to bring back the guillotine. Specifically, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say they. Prince Charles wanted to bring back decapitation, the guillotine, because he wanted to chop off Lady Di's head. And ultimately, it ended up being sort of a spoof of Herman's Hermits, even going as far as to having a band, and on the drum it said Herman's Hermits.
Yep.
Again, as I see it, it was just, you know, more not necessarily warranted attacking of Princess Di. But again, that was big in the day, so I understand where they're coming from. But now we're out of the PepsiCo sponsored shows. Where are we at now, Greg?
The Szechuan Dynasty Dana Carvey Show.
And the first skit on this night was World News Tonight, and it was looking at Bob Dole and Bill Clinton physically preparing for the presidential race, and it was very bizarre. I mean, you had Bill Clinton running, you had Bob Dole running, and the thing is, Bill Clinton back in the day did jog. They made him unusually pudgy again through prosthetics, but also Bob Dole, they had him doing stuff which really physically he couldn't do because of his age at the time. But also because, if you remember, his right arm was incapacitated, and he'd generally hold like a pen or a pencil in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even at one point, they had Bob Dole stretching his legs, and he pulled his leg by his shoulder and actually ripped the leg out of its socket. Again, goofy, but a little absurd.
And then you have your show open and your monologue, and they're dressed as Szechuan Dynasty servers, and I don't know if that's the actual chef and hostess they have, but there you go. And then
again, kind of racist.
Kind of, sort of, yeah. Then you have Techno Future, which was a sort of pseudo-futurist vintage look into how life would be. And one of the people who was in this sketch was Louis C.K. as a guy wearing a pair of goggles that detects bees.
Yeah, that was a little goofy.
I liked that one.
Well, it was a little goofy. I mean, one of the items I remember was milk on demand. So you could just say, oh, yeah, I want a glass of skim milk or 1% milk. And it's basically taken directly from the teat, and it comes out a little hose by your computer monitor. Little goofy. But then you had another installment of Entertainment Headlines, but this time they're looking at MTV and the Unabomber. Remember, Unabomber was a big topic back in the day.
It was, and the Unabomber was looking for love on MTV. And where do you go looking for love on MTV in the mid-90s?
Singled out.
Chris Hardwick before he was King Nerd, and Jenny McCarthy before she was sharing a table with Alan Thicke's youngest.
Well, I thought you were going to go with something else about Chris Hardwick and Jenny McCarthy, but I'm just going to leave it there.
No, I thought he was going to go there too. Chris Hardwick before the wall and Jenny McCarthy pre-anti-vaxxer.
Oh, no. I was going to say something else about Chris Hardwick.
Yeah, let's leave it there.
Yeah, don't go there. No.
We are not going there.
Let's say Chris Hardwick pre-At Midnight.
Yeah.
That's a safe response.
Yeah, that's all we're going to say, guys.
Okay, so then we have Discovery Channel After Dark, which is basically a compilation of animals. Well, you heard Bad Touch by the Bloodhound Gang. You and me, baby, ain't nothing but mammals, so let's do it like they do on the Discovery Channel. Yeah, I don't need to explain this to y'all. And then...
sex!
We like to use the term relations, but whatever. Then there's Skinheads from Maine. It's racist and anti-Semitic. But it's also very folksy.
This didn't sit well with me. I'm sorry.
No, it did not.
What was after this, though, I thought was very funny.
Entertainment Headlines looks at Madani.
Yes. What it was a person named Madani in New York who claimed he was the first person that did a lot of stuff Madonna did, wearing the chains with the cross on it. Putting out a book. If you remember, Madonna back in the day had the sex book. He claimed he had a book out before then, which sold no copies, but was very similar to the sex book. I thought it was really funny. He even had the hairdo that Madonna had back in the late 80s, early 90s. I thought it was really funny, really clever. And sadly, I think, yeah, that was a bright point here. But on the other side of that sketch was another installment of Skinheads from Maine. But at least after that, we got Grandma the Clown again.
Oh, that's fun.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was hilarious because one of the things she tried doing this time, I'm sure you've seen a lot of clowns give themselves pies in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Grandma the Clown was trying to do the same, but she had like a, I don't know how to phrase it, something that was going to throw the pie in her face, but it didn't really go at a regular speed. It went at, let's say, Grandma the Clown speed, and so it just came up and booped her nose, and you saw this little bit of whipped cream around her nose, and she thought it was absolutely hilarious.
Just about, yeah. And then came the Food Network After Dark. which is basically somebody putting a hot dog into bun. Extreme close-ups of an oyster. Use your imagination.
And jello jiggling.
And jello jiggling.
And then you had Peter Jennings on the FBI, Pied Piper, and Freeman's Siege at a Montana ranch. Again, timeliness with the Freeman's Siege.
And again, Stephen Colbert doing what he does best, delivering news with as straight a face as possible.
And yeah, the whole basis of this was the government decided to try the Pied Piper because the Pied Piper got rid of rats and got children to follow him. It didn't work out so well when you try using the Pied Piper to get rid of an anti-government militia.
No, it did not.
Yeah, at least originally.
And then we ran out the show, C-SPAN After Dark, which is basically a few shots of the Washington Monument.
Because it's phallic.
Episode 7. It just says...
Yeah, there's no sponsor.
Yeah, it just says the Dana Carvey Show number 7. Now, this was the last one to actually air. We have Newt Gingrich, Washington Pays Its Own Way. Basically, paring down on stuff like turning... What were they going to do? Turn the White House into a floating gambling casino?
Into a riverboat casino.
That would have been awesome. That would have been awesome.
And replacing the Lincoln Memorial with a sign that said Lincoln was right and a penny taped to it.
And then you have the Kennedy memorabilia auction. Now remember, this was 1996. The JFK memorabilia auction was like a big thing at this time.
Mm-hmm.
The Kennedy memorabilia auction was done at Sotheby's. During the auction, one of the items that came up was John F. Kennedy's rocking chair. And so when people bid on it, the auctioneer would be, who'd give me $250,000 for this? And so somebody would raise their hand, and the auctioneer would be like, oh, okay, thanks for the bid from the person who'll be sitting on his porch in the John F. Kennedy rocking chair saying, oh, look at me, I'm John F. Kennedy sitting in my rocking chair. And he basically just mocked the people who were bidding throughout the process. But then at the end, the final scene, you had the person who won the rocking chair actually doing that. Oh, look at me, I'm John F. Kennedy. I'm sitting in my rocking chair. Ha 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 ha. I thought it was really funny. But then, this was great. This was good. The cutting room floor remembers if I only had an ass. So what it was you had a Gene Shalit impersonator looking at cutting room floor material from famous movies. And this one was a takeoff of The Wizard of Oz. So we all know The Wizard of Oz, you know, the lion wanted courage and the Tin Man wanted a heart and the Scarecrow wanted a brain. Well, there was a fourth character which didn't make the cut, and he wishes he had an ass. And he pulled down his pants and you saw a fake butt, but without a crack. He had no ass.
He had no ass.
What a shame. How terrible would that be to live life with no ass?
And he even sang a little song, like If I Only Had a Brain, but it was If I Only Had an Ass, talking about then he could fart and he could poop and stuff like that. And here's that very song right now.
Oh.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Oh, I am dead.
The hours I would while with Naima Rudiko smile, the days would quickly pass. Oh, the ladies would be swooning, well, I would be just mooning if I only had an ass. I would do a lot of sitting, my pants would be a fitting, I'd pass a lot of gas. To the folks, I'd be relating all about my defecating if I only had an ass. Oh, I would run around I crack with ribbons too. What's the matter? Don't you? With my back facing a mirror, I'd scrutinize my rear in that looking glass. There would be a lot of takers when I'd shake my money maker if I only had an ass.
More Peter Jennings. Peter Jennings gives anonymous interviews. Again, Stephen Colbert as Peter Jennings. And again, Stephen Colbert being incredibly deadpan serious while trying to keep a straight face. Perfecting his Stephen Colbert persona.
Not only that, but you have a cameo.
I'm looking at the cameo right now. Isaac Hayes and a teddy bear.
Yep, Isaac Hayes as quote-unquote Kim.
The next sketch that came up was famous first ladies as dogs. And this was actually mentioned on the DVD commentary. It's probably one of the funniest bits. Heather Morgan dressed up as, probably I'd say minimum of like 7 first ladies. Hillary Clinton, Jackie Kennedy, Nancy Reagan, Barbara Bush, Eleanor Roosevelt, Mary Todd Lincoln. I'm sure there's one or two that I'm missing.
The Mary Todd Lincoln one's the best, where she's fighting with a dog over a sock.
Yes.
They both have it with their teeth.
Well, not just that. The Jackie Kennedy one, too, was very funny, because somebody threw a milk bone at her, and she caught it in her mouth.
This has been Heather Morgan's first ladies as dogs.
And then, this was real funny too. The Chicago Bulls' quest for the NBA championship.
Remember, this was 1996, the season of 70.
Right.
This is the year they went 72-10.
Yeah.
Yes. And this was their take on the NBA on NBC coverage with Marv Albert and Bill Walton. And this was, oh my gosh. It was great because every time they went to Marv Albert and Bill Walton, either Bill Walton kept on getting taller or Marv Albert kept on getting shorter. but also, you need to remember, first off, Bill Walton is like 7'2 or 7'3. He is a tall person. But ultimately, by the end of the sketch, you have Bill Walton filling up like the entirety of the screen. And for Marv Albert, you just see his head at the bottom of the screen. It's very funny, and not a bad impersonation of Bill Walton, because if you know who he is, he's a bit of, say the least, a throwback to the 60s and 70s. He's a true hippie.
And also, Bill Walton, he kind of likes the wacky tobacco a little bit.
Just a little bit, yeah.
He likes to light one up.
And then after that, you had a PSA from Strayhound Buses, basically saying why you should take buses over flying, because there's a better chance that your plane could fly into a mountain, and even though you'll get there faster, you know, there's a higher chance of you dying. So why not take your time and take a bus?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just got really weird. The last segment was world leaders and their baths, and they showed Jordan's King Hussein in the bath, in a bubble bath, playing with army men at a tank. Very bizarre. And then during the closing credits, they had Prince Charles in a similar bath, but his bath was just full of tea bags, and he poured cream in there, put sugar in there, and actually at one point, drank the tea out of the bathtub.
Ew.
Yuck.
Yeah, a little bizarre to say the least. We should mention the opening monologue was the Regis Philbin talking to Dana Carvey doing Regis Philbin.
Yes. So now we get to the final episode, which was the unaired episode. So by that point, ABC was completely done with the show. So you know what they aired in the Dana Carvey show's final episode's place?
Coach?
Yes, not just a special Coach, but a special episode of Coach with Troy Aikman guest starring.
where somebody was going to be the recipient of Troy Aikman's seed.
Yes.
So the show starts with another Charles Grodin segment. And this Charles Grodin segment, who was there? There was Gene Wilder, again being done by Elon Gold. And I forget who else was there. Funny segment.
I think you had someone doing Richard Lewis, I think.
No, I don't remember Richard Lewis.
Okay.
Okay, Elon Gold did Gene Wilder, and he did Jeff Goldblum.
He did. That's it.
Elon Gold did Jeff Goldblum.
And again, did those really well.
Of course, this was before he decided to mellow himself out.
So after Charles Grodin, we had the show open in monologue, but the monologue itself consisted really of one joke, right, Chico?
Yeah, it was just, okay, this is my impersonation of Katharine Hepburn trying to start a stalled car. And that was the monologue.
Yeah, imagine a car with a stalled ignition that sounds like Katharine Hepburn. That was it. But that took us to a really funny sketch, I thought. Bob Dole undercover.
With falling pole numbers, Bob Dole just goes and disguises himself as key people in Bill Clinton's administration and tries to ruin him like that.
Including Hillary Clinton, too.
That was wrong.
Well, it was wrong. It was doubly wrong because they were in bed at the time.
Next was Germans who say nice things that come out wrong. Yeah. That's basically, screw it, we're already canceled. Let's just do this thing and do the dirty version, as it were.
And then you had the stupid pranksters, but this time they went to a bowling alley. They got a lane. They bought the shoes. They actually, and I think this is a practice. Maybe it's still done nowadays, but I remember back in the day, you had to give them a shoe so you couldn't just walk off with the bowling shoes. So both Steve Carell and Dana Carvey's characters gave one of their shoes plus the deposit for the money for the bowling shoe. And then as the guy was getting the bowling shoes, what did they do? They dashed out, even though they had one shoe on, and peeled out of the bowling alley parking lot.
Yes.
And then you had a David Schwimmer PSA.
Yeah, it was basically the more you know with David Schwimmer. And then the sketch, so nice, they did it twice. Tom Brokaw anticipates the death of Gerald Ford.
Do we have to describe what this sketch is? Because I'm sure there's probably some people out there that don't know what this sketch is about.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so Tom Brokaw, to want to stay at his house in the Hamptons, records a bunch of segments anticipating certain events that might occur in the future, so that they can already get them in the can. And one of them just happens to be the death of Gerald Ford.
And it starts out normally where they say, we're sad to announce the death of Gerald Ford tonight at the age of 83. Okay, let's do it again, but let's do it for next year. We're sad to announce the death of Gerald Ford at age 84. And then they go back and bring up different scenarios in which Gerald Ford may pass away.
Oh, yeah, there's one event where he was chopped into bits in a commuter plane.
Of course, there was one where he says, Gerald Ford was senselessly eaten by wolves today at the age of 83. He was delicious.
And then Gerald Ford committing suicide.
senselessly committing suicide.
Senseless committing suicide, yes. And then the last one, it had to do with Zimbabwe.
Yeah, in case the U.S. was invaded by Zimbabwe.
And you had and you had Dana Carvey as Tom Brokaw doing, like, clicking noises.
Oh, but...
Umbunga, unga, bunga, munga, bunan. Gerald Ford.
But the best part was, Gerald Ford is dead and I'm gay.
Well, what would happen if, hey, on the same day Gerald Ford died and you come out of the closet and then we're screwed?
Next thing you know, everyone's hearing about it from Dan Raver. Next we get Mark Twain Tonight starring Stomp.
Mm-hmm.
Because Stomp was a big thing back in the day.
Stomp was a very big thing back in the day.
And all the people in Stomp were dressed as Mark Twain. That was a sight.
Yeah, that was a sight. Then you had Overly Anxious Dinner Conversation with Heather Morgan, basically as a date, as your date, and her trying to make something happen. It ended with her head exploding. It was beautiful.
Then we get the stupid pranksters go to a photo booth.
And then this week with David Brinkley.
Oh.
This was funny.
Yeah, the show is pretty much done while everybody was riding an aerodynamics corkscrew type roller coaster.
Yes.
Yeah. You had Dana Carvey playing George Will, who, again, would have been a thing on ABC News back then.
And you had Colbert as David Brinkley.
Yep.
Which was a very scary David Brinkley, as a matter of fact.
Yep. Now, this was sort of meta in that Dana Carvey is, and I learned this when I was binging on Roller Coaster YouTube over the summer, a very big roller coaster fan.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He was on the he was there for the launch of Drachenfire at Busch Gardens Williamsburg. You know, back when it was a thing.
That'll be in the spinoff podcast. It was a thing at the amusement park.
Well, things didn't go so well for Dana Carvey on the roller coaster.
No, they did not.
Yeah, he didn't necessarily lose his lunch, but at one point a barf bag was used, presumably pre-filled with oatmeal or something, and yeah, he had a little bit of an upchuck, and it went all over his face and all over the ride, and yeah, delicious. Funny, but yeah.
And the final sketch ever.
Oh, yeah. The stupid pranksters win the lottery.
But this is the great installment of stupid pranksters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, because to present the check, you have the governor of New York State at the time, George Pataki, presenting the stupid pranksters with the check for winning the lottery.
Yeah, they do the same stuff they've always done. They dash, but then you see them, as they're laughing and driving away, they suddenly stop and get really quiet, and they have that moment. You know, we left $16 million in Governor Pataki's hands. Why wouldn't they just turn around and go back for it? They just kept on driving down the road.
Who knows?
Maybe they realize in the future, in about 20 years, George Pataki will be a answer to a question on Jeopardy, and nobody will get him correct because everyone forgets that George Pataki was a governor for 12 years.
Well, that's the show. Do you guys see any way this could have been saved? I've got a couple of ideas as to maybe if there were some changes that maybe the show would have lived on beyond 7 episodes.
If you ask me, it had to do with the network. I mean, they were writing a really good show. They were writing a really solid show and a really funny show. Unfortunately, it was on the wrong network at the wrong time. Yes, you could get away with stuff like that now, but in 1996 on ABC, just having been bought out by Disney, wasn't going to happen. So if it were me, I would have put it on like a Comedy Central or an HBO.
Well, it's funny you mention that because HBO originally wanted to have the Dana Carvey Show.
Oh, yeah, that's right, isn't it?
Well, my idea was similar but a little different. I think you're absolutely right about the time slot and the network, but where I think I would have put it, I would have put it after Mad TV on Fox, put it at midnight on Saturdays.
Interesting you mentioned that because once upon a time, after Mad TV, you know what aired after Mad TV?
Talk Spike show Harrison
with
show.
Spike Barristan.
Right. I just think it would have worked better there. Fox, especially at that time, was known for pushing the envelope. I don't know if ABC necessarily knew what they were getting into when they.
I think when they bought into the show, they wanted more church lady and less. Well,
less what we got. Yeah. Especially airing immediately after Home Improvement, you'd think it would be more of a family type of comedy, like you mentioned earlier, Coach, or something in that vein. This definitely was not for a 9:30 after Home Improvement audience. It was definitely maybe like a Fox audience or a Saturday night audience. Definitely not a Tuesday night audience.
Yeah.
Well, that's the Dana Carvey Show.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
PlaySuite Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySuiteNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the PlaySuite Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop Feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaySuiteNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaySuiteNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaySuiteNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Episode 43, Submission 901, Hulk Hogan Commercials.
I am a real American, fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American, fight for what's right, fight for your life.
We'll be right back.
Well, guys, when you think of professional wrestling and pop culture, there's one name that everyone automatically thinks of, and that is the Hulkster himself, Hulk Hogan.
Brother!
Yes, Hulk Hogan, throughout the last 35 years, has been maybe the one person you associate most from the average Americana person when they think about professional wrestling, and the Hulkster's influence goes well beyond the professional wrestling world, as he has done some TV shows, including future installment Thunder in Paradise.
Brother!
Yes. But over the years, the Hulkster has done what any professional athlete would do, and that is sell out to the man, brother. And I'm not talking about Becky Lynch.
No, you're talking about the man.
Yes.
Because when you are a success in whatever field you happen to be a part of, guess what you're called to do?
Commercials, yes. And we're going to be talking about a bunch of commercials the Hulkster has done over the years.
Get ready for Pitch Mania.
Yes. And we're going to start first with a commercial the Hulkster did for Honey Nut Cheerios back in 1985.
Hey, P, no way a little dude like you is going to change my ways.
It's time you were tempted with the taste of nuts and honey.
Hulk Hogan doesn't eat nuts and honey.
Did you take this? An unbeatable part of this nutritious breakfast.
That's better than a body slam.
Undefeated.
And still champion.
It's a honey of the night. It's Honey Nut Cheerios.
6 years after Honey Nut Cheerios was introduced, we get Buzz trying to rip his sweater off.
Yes. So let's describe this commercial. So the Hulkster is like, nope, nobody's going to make me eat Honey Nut Cheerios, brother.
And then, then Buzz just offers him a bowl.
Yeah, he just pushes the spoon into the Hulkster's mouth. And then he bends the spoon.
And all the while saying, that's better than a body slam. Well, it is.
Yeah.
He's not wrong.
No. And so Buzz just comes out walking all tough like, undefeated! And the Hulkster says, and still champion! And so you have the Hulkster and Buzz trying to do poses. And as the Hulkster rips off his shirt, Buzz tries to whip off his sweater, but to no success, as he falls flat on his face.
On his B-face. But you know what? It's all good. Because we all eat... Because Honey Nut Cheerios is a staple in the Alexander household now.
Yes, it's well part of a balanced breakfast. That's what that's what you have when you say your prayers and eat your vitamins.
Yeah. And get your whole grain, brother.
All right, next we have the Hulk Hogan Hulkamania workout set.
Oh no.
Now this is weird because if I'm not mistaken, this doesn't have Hulk in it. At all.
No, it has Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff in the commercial.
Hey, how can I get muscles like you guys? Wow, Mr. Wonderful!
You can start by getting in shape with the Hulkamania workout set.
Great!
It's got everything you need. Head and wristband. A jump rope for warming up. A hand gripper for power. Dumbbells for strength. An exercise poster. And even Hulk's own workout tape.
The Hulkamania workout set. You from LJN.
Are you in shape yet?
Yeah!
Oh!
So we have the Hulkamania workout set released by LJN because at the time, LJN was responsible for the WWF line of action figures at the time. They weren't necessarily action figures. They were more figures.
I still remember as a little Chico with my Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, obviously, Chico, you're from North Carolina. Everyone loves Greg the Hammer Valentine and Crockett Country there in North Carolina.
Yep.
But not only that, we have a kid looking at posters of the Hulkster and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, being like, gee, how can I get muscles like you guys? And then all of a sudden, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff shows up, and he says, well, you can start by getting the Hulkamania workout set. It has everything. A wristband, a headband, a jump rope for warming up, where we have the kid, what would you say, awkwardly
skipping rope.
Yes. We have dumbbells, an exercise poster, and the Hulkster's personal workout tape. It is everything you could need.
Yep. Except for one thing, which we won't go into.
Yeah, brother.
Christina Claridge's sister?
Oh.
Stop.
All right. Next we go to 800 Lone Mart.
Now is this, now he's done several, actually. Is this the help desk or the Bill Bryan or the therapy?
This is the therapy one.
Tell me about your problems.
I have bad credit, no girlfriend, and no life. At least I own my car.
I have a solution. 1-800-LOAN-MART, brother.
1-800-LOAN-MART, baby!
Sounds like you need more money to have fun, right?
Exactly.
Since your car is paid off, it's as good as cash. Call 1-800-LOAN-MART, brother.
Your problem is solved! 800-LOAN-MART.com, baby!
So, okay. Jimmy Hart has a bullhorn. You know what you do? Whatever Jimmy Hart with the bullhorn tells you to do.
Yeah.
This is like a throwback to the late 80s. Good heavens. Hulk Hogan and Jimmy Hart must have been desperate for a paycheck.
Yeah, Greg, so we found on that.
All right, let me describe this commercial. Now, this is like the highlight of a bunch of these commercials that the Hulkster did for 800 Lone Mart. So we have a guy sitting on a couch as voice, which is the Hulkster's, tells him about his problems. And he has no credit and he has no girlfriend. And so the Hulkster just pulls him up off the couch saying, "Hey, I've got the solution, brother. It's 1-800 Lone Mart." And then Jimmy Hart pops up with the megaphone. He's like, "Yeah, that's right, baby. 1-800 Lone Mart." Well, the Hulkster's like, "Since your car is paid off, it's as good as cash, brother. Call 1-800-LOAN-MART, brother." And then Jimmy Hart's like, "Your problem is solved!" As the Hulkster throws the poor sap over the top rope.
So this is a title loan place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Hulk is getting desperate. He must have gotten desperate because of the divorce.
Oh yeah. Linda really took him to the cleaners.
Rubber. Well, shall we go back to a happier time? When all he had to worry about was, and I'm using his words now, odoriferous emanations.
Yeah.
In trying to make an artistic statement, one should be careful not to let one's personal aroma do the talking. In order not to offend the critics, I recommend Rightguard Sports Stick. It provides maximum protection and the freshest scents, a sublime palette of odoriferous emanations. After all, a true artiste should be remembered for his inspiration, not his perspiration. Rightguard Sports Stick. Anything less would be uncivilized.
Okay, that's a classic commercial from the late 80s.
Very much so.
I mean, everything in that, my childhood came back to me. The splendiferous odor. What is it? Splendiferous
odoriferous emanations.
The odoriferous emanations, and
one should be known for his inspiration,
not his perspiration. Oh my gosh, that was classic.
It was indeed classic. It's like, who remembers growing up with your dinner, watching the Full House on the TGIF, and then the Hulkster painting on the beach, some sort of Bob Ross looking landscape, and then talking about deodorant. And that's a straight face.
That's a show I want to see. Hulk Hogan painting like Bob Ross.
We're going to paint some little trees here, brother.
Okay. Our next segment is not necessarily a commercial, but it's a, I guess you would say, a 2-minute advertisement, kind of, sort of. Okay. We go to 1995, September 4th, as a matter of fact. It's the premiere episode of WCW Monday Nitro. And where was WCW Monday Nitro being held, you ask? But the Mall of America in Minnesota, where just coincidentally, the Hulkster had a restaurant there.
Michael Jordan's got his restaurant in Chicago. Coach Don Shula of the Miami Dolphins, he's got a steakhouse. But WCW's own World Heavyweight Champion Hulk Hogan, he's got Pasta Mania in the Mall of America. I want to try to get a word with him if I can squeeze in there. Hulk Hogan coming up.
Where you go, brother?
Debut edition of Monday Nitro. You've got Big Bub in the main event.
Who's the greatest wrestler in the world? You know something, Eric Bischoff? Tonight on Monday Nitro, Pasta Mania has got all my Hulkamaniacs running wild. And I've eaten so many Hulkaroos and Hulkyous, I kind of feel sorry for Big Bubba, brother. Because tonight, brother, first time on TNT, I'm putting the WCW heavyweight title on the line. And with Pasta Mania running through my brain, who's going to beat Big Bubba tonight, Hulkamaniacs? And when I'm done dragging him around the Mall of America and all my Pasta Maniacs are tearing their WCW shirts off, brother, I'm going to give Big Bubba a dose of my Hulkaroos up there, and then I'm going to body slam him again. You know, with little Hulkamaniacs like that, Pasta Maniacs all around the Mall of America, Big Bubba, you better tighten up that waistline, brother, because the Hulkster's slim and trim. I've been eating my Pasta Mania, and what you gonna do in the Mall of America, brother, when Hulk Hogan, Pasta Mania, and all my Pasta Maniacs run wild on you? What's he gonna do? All right.
That's carb-filled.
Yes.
And then next after that is the massive failure of Hulk Hogan's Pasta Mania. Okay, I'm not watching that, but okay.
Oh, it's a great video where somehow the Hulk Hogan Pasta Mania awning survived and was put in the back of an abandoned building. And seriously, no one knows where it came from.
Oh, my. What to say about this?
All right, so you have Eric Bischoff at Hulk Hogan's Pasta Mania getting an interview with the Hulkster at his restaurant while he's being mobbed for autographs, and he's talking about how Pasta Mania's running wild and how he's hating so many Hulkaroos and Hulkyous that he feels sorry for his opponent on Monday Night Show tonight, Big Bubba Brother. But man, could you imagine if I was at the Mall of America in 1995, like what would be better than to just go to the food court and eat at a pasta-themed restaurant run by Hulk Hogan? Because, you know, mid-90s, celebrity-themed restaurants were like the big thing at the time.
Indeed.
Yes, they were.
Yeah. And because you have the Mall of America, people were trying to bring malls to the amusement park for a long time. Now you have people bringing amusement parks to the mall, hence the Mall of America. And, well, Mall of America, Hulk Hogan, Pasta Mania, Hulkaroos, Hulkayous, Jimmy Hart with the heavyweight belts on the line. What you gonna do, brother?
Oh, that was the best part. Jimmy Hart just holding the WCW big gold belt in the air.
Like, yeah, you want this? Come and get it.
Yeah, Big Bubba Rogers. You gotta go get that belt. You gotta eat your Hulk Hughes, brother.
It's like, oh man, okay, so you have to eat your Honey Nut Cheerios, you gotta eat your Hulkaroos. I'm gonna have time, I'm gonna get my fiber's worth by the time this show is over, I'm sorry.
I'm gonna need some Hulk Hogan Rolaids.
Some Hulk Hogan themed Pepto-Bismol.
That's right, brother.
Alright, so our next commercial has the Hulkster on MTV on the big ... show.
Yo, Hulkamaniacs! MTV's got a brand new show, the big show, with big videos, live music, weird acts, comedy, and a different call-in contest every night. They're giving away cash! They're giving away TVs! They're even giving away a bus trip to Cleveland! They're giving away cameras, comic books, a jet ski, and a one-night stand with the Who. They're even giving away me, or at least a night with me, at a private screening of my new movie. And on the first night of the show, they're giving away this new Harley Davidson. It's the big show, live contest, the largest arms in the world, live winners every night.
Premieres this Monday at 8 p.m. 7 Central, only on MTV.
Oh man, what to describe with this clip?
I'm trying to figure this out too.
I'm just trying to figure out why they'd want to come to Cleveland in 1989. I mean, the Rock Hall wouldn't be built for another 6 years or so. The Indians were the laughingstock of baseball.
I don't know.
Well, the WWF was at Richfield Coliseum all the time.
Yeah, true. But, I mean, even Richfield Coliseum is about 30 miles south of Cleveland. It's almost closer to Akron than Cleveland.
But, man, the prizes that they were giving away. They were giving away a trip to see the Who. They're giving away cash. They're giving away. They even tried to give away the Hulkster. Well, at least a night with the Hulkster at the premiere of his new movie, No Holds Barred. Oh man, if we ever do that Patreon spinoff podcast, it was a thing at the movies. That's gonna be one of the first shows we do, along with the Talking Cat and Laquisha.
Jeez.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about the greatness of Kurt Fuller and No Holds Barred. Damn it. Because, god damn it, we need to discuss how great Kurt Fuller is.
But also, they gave away a Harley Davidson on the premiere.
Yes.
I was like, they were giving away a lot of stuff in the short runtime of that show.
Yeah. And I also love that the title is The Big... the Big Bleep Show. So, yeah. It's kind of funny. Considering the Hulkster doesn't fight the Big Show until, like, another 6 years on the roof of Cobo Hall. Oh, by the way, that's going to be a future entry.
Hulk Hogan versus the Big Show.
Hold up. Hold up. Mike's going to die when I type this. Hold on a second. The time. Hulk Hogan. Hold up. And the Big Show. That is... Oh. Hold on. Had a truck edge on the group. And Hulk.
Hulk Hogan has not begun.
I want you to read it, Mike.
Oh my god.
Okay. I'm letting Chico get it out of the system because I don't want to react to his laughter.
The time, okay. Hulk.
No, hold on. Let me read it.
I want him to read it out loud. I want you to read it out loud, Mike.
Yes, Mike. Read this out loud.
11:89. The time Hulk Hogan and the Big Show had a sumo monster truck match on the roof of Cobo Hall, and Hulk was trying to come up.
That definitely was a thing on TV.
I was doing really well until I got to those last four words. Oh, shit. Okay. Now, hold on. I can't wait for that episode. just because when I type up the description, episode 194, the time Hulk Hogan and the Big Show had a sumo monster truck match on the roof of Cabo Hall, and Hulk was dry humped by a mummy. Oh my gosh.
All right.
Dry humped by a mummy. What the hell does that even mean?
Oh yeah. Because then I'd have to go into the backstory about the Dungeon of Doom in WCW. The whole backstory will be like 20 minutes before we get to like, it'll be like an omnibus style episode where we'll have to go in depth on the backstory before we get to the actual subject.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Okay. I got it all out of my system.
Alright. Let's.
And it's a good thing too because Hulk Hogan has not yet begun to sell out.
No.
We've had Hulk Hogan for Cheerios. We've had Hulk Hogan for Pasta Mania. We've had Hulk Hogan for deodorant. Now get ready because Hulk Hogan is coming to clean your house,
brother.
Oh no, not crayon on the wall.
Under stress, got a mess. Hi, Hulk Hogan here for Pumex. Watch how easy.
Look how the Pumex Power Gel cuts through any mess without chemicals. Fast. No vapors or fumes. All natural, but powerful enough to clean in just one pass. Only Pumex gives you this kind of cleaning power without harsh chemicals or detergents. It's chemical free.
Permanent marker on Formica? You can use it anywhere. Nothing's permanent.
The secret is Pumex combines volcanic pumice stone ground into tiny micro particles whose natural and unique properties scrub without scratching and naturally cut through your toughest messes without any chemicals.
Pumex puts the power of pumice in the palm of your hand.
Pumex is powerful enough to cut through soap scum and hard water stains with just one pass, but won't scratch mirrors or glass. But remember, only Pumex is chemical free, so it's safe to clean marker off little hands.
Take Pumex outside. Get your barbecues ready for dinner time. You can use Pumex on anything. Normally, a 4-ounce tube of Pumex Power Gel sells for $9.95. But if you call right now, I'm going to Hulk-a-size it to the giant 8-ounce Pumex Power Gel. That's 4 more ounces free.
Here's the best part. Call right now and get the Pumex Concentrate free.
Don't spend over $3 for a bottle of chemicals.
Just one 4-ounce bottle of Pumex Concentrate makes up to 32 quarts of powerful cleaning solution.
That's $100 in savings. Cut through soap scum without scrubbing. Just spray, wipe, and rinse tough grime away. We'll also include 2 Pumex erasers free. Wipe away scuff marks and dirt from all surfaces fast. Call now and get the Hulk-a-size Pumex Power Gel, 4 ounces of concentrate, spray bottle, and 2 Pumex erasers. Over $120 worth of cleaning power for only $14.95.
Pick up the phone. Order your Pumex right now.
I don't know about you, but I want to clean my bathroom right now.
Oh, man. This Pumex is amazing. It can clean anything. It's all natural.
It is all natural. Isn't it just repurposed lava soap?
Yeah.
Well, that's what lava was. Yeah, it was pumice.
It cleans with the power of pumice.
It has pumice microparticles. You can scrub without scratching, guys.
I know.
Also, I don't want to surprise you, but if you go to pumex.com, guess what?
What?
It's available for purchase.
Oh, we can probably buy it. How much does that cost?
$14.95 plus postage. I don't know.
No, I think he's talking about the website. Oh, the owner of Pumex.com is offering it for sale for an asking price of 5,500 euros. Well,
yeah.
Well, no. Shit, if I didn't lose all that money in the stock market the last 2 weeks.
That's why you should never invest in the stock market, kids.
Invest in Pumex.com instead. I do like that, you know, right now, if you order, you can get it Hulk-a-sized.
Hulk-a-sized. Which is really just double the regular size.
Yep. All right, so next we're going to go into a series of phone ads. Now, guys, you remember back in the day when along with calling ads, you had ads for numbers that began with 1010, like 1010321 and the like.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was about 25 years ago, yeah.
So we had ads for 1010220 that the Hulkster did back in around 1999 to 2000. And so we have a trio of ads, one with Alf, one with Terry Bradshaw, and one with Mike Piazza. Enjoy, folks.
My friends call me sensitive. I guess I am a bit. I really want to call them, but I simply can't commit.
Hey, you! Me thinketh that stinketh.
Alf, it's about 1010220.
Well, don't forget the best part. 99 cents for all calls up to 20 minutes. It's cheap. Write about that.
I want to write about no monthly commitment, dude.
What about no signing up?
Yeah, I like that. Brother.
Obviously from another mother.
Dial 1010220.
Swan, be a swan.
I don't think I'm swan material. Sorry, kind of new at this.
That's okay. It's good to try new things.
That's what I tell people about 1010220.
I use that. All my calls up to 20 minutes are 99 cents.
I haven't signed up for that.
You don't have to. Just dial 1010220, then 1, and the number.
That's easy.
It sure is. I knew you could do it. Help. I think I'm stuck.
Dial 1010220.
They call this art?
I tell you what I call it, brother.
It symbolizes my frustration of committing to a phone plan I don't always need.
You should be dialing 1010220, little dude.
Yeah, it's a great phone service with no monthly commitment.
With 1010220, all calls up to 20 minutes are 99 cents.
It's cheap, whether you use it a little or a lot.
That is a great deal.
Now, this speaks to me.
It says cheap.
Dial 1010220.
Brother!
All right, I don't know about you guys, but Mike Piazza looks weird without a mustache.
Thank you, Chico! Thank you, thank you, thank you! That was the first thing I was going to say.
Yeah, this was probably at the Ricky Vaughn at the start of Major League 2 phase of Mike Piazza's career.
Ah, that explains it.
This must have been right around the time he got traded to the Florida Marlins.
And had to get something, had to have a new look for South Beach, I don't know.
And then a week later, he got traded to the Mets.
Thank you, Mike Francesa and Chris Russo, by the way.
Mike and the Mad Dog era. That was about 1010. That was about the same time as the 1010 numbers. And of course, if you were to call the 1010 numbers nowadays, they would be a lot more expensive, I think.
Yeah.
Or if the fine folks at Oddity Archive are correct.
But not only that, but come on, Alf. The Hulkster with Alf.
That was about 7 or 8 years after Alf's shelf life expired.
Yeah, that's about 4 or 5 years after Alf the Pog.
Remember Alf? He's back in Pog form.
Well, also, let's remember that Alf had a TV movie. Project Alf was 96, yeah. So, yeah, this would have been about the time
And, of course, there was the TV Land talk show that Alf did.
Oh, I forgot about the TV Land talk show.
No, not just the talk show. Future installment, the Alf TV Land talk show.
Plus,
another reason I mentioned Project Alf. Who played Dr. Warner in the Project Alf movie? Ed Begley Jr.
Oh, yeah. He probably was doing that while in between when he was probably murdering some people. Oh, wait a minute. I just remembered. Ed Begley Jr. was also in Santa with Muscles with Hulk Hogan as the villain of the movie. That's another thing we're going to have on our spinoff Patreon podcast one day. Santa with Muscles. Yes. So, guys, what do we have to say about the Terry Bradshaw 1010220 ad?
He was definitely trying to branch out from his Fox NFL persona.
He was starting to enter extreme shill mode, too, at this time.
Yeah.
But also, who knew that he could do ballet, or at least attempt to do ballet?
Also a good singer, from what I understand.
He was on The Masked Singer, so it's very true.
Although not as good as T-Pain, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly better than Sarah Palin.
Can't rap for bears.
No.
Okay, so we talked about Alf, we talked about Mike Piazza, and we've covered everything then. So let's go into Hostamania. What in the world is this?
Again, thank your lucky stars. This is not a video podcast.
Okay, let's take a look at this. Sound-alike version of
American Made is WCW theme.
Yeah. His WCW American Made theme. Because again, this would be around the same time that he was making it big in WCW. Also around the time where hosting websites was a big thing.
Yeah.
It's still a big thing.
Oh, it's quite the big thing, but this is when it was just getting started.
Yeah.
Also, about 10 years before Miley Cyrus thought.
No,
this is 2013.
I'm a wrecking ball. Yes.
Yeah, this is 2013, so this is time that Miley Cyrus did the wrecking ball.
I thought this was...
No, this is 2013.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't blame Chico because this is a timeless ad.
This one's weird. I'm wondering why Hulk Hogan, first off, is using crayons. But also, did you guys notice he only had two color crayons?
Yes.
He had red and he had yellow.
Yeah, that wasn't him.
Yeah, that was the guy who looked like the Hulkster.
No, it may have looked like the Hulkster.
Because that's one of his most famous fans that just happens to look like him.
Mm-hmm.
You're kidding. Oh my gosh.
I'm not kidding you. Because I've seen him like outside ringside at King of the Ring, WWF King of the Ring 93, and some WCW pay-per-views around 94, 95. Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Well, the other takeaway, and again, thank heavens this isn't a video podcast.
Oh, we got to describe this.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Hulk Hogan at this time would have been about 60 years old, since we said it was 2013. And he comes in on this wrecking ball. Well, to start off with, he's wearing wrestling tights, if you will, like he probably would have worn in the ring.
Yeah,
but then after he kicks this guy in the face on the wrecking ball, yeah. Suddenly he's wearing a black man thong. Yeah, and the wrecking ball is spinning around, so you get a couple of clear shots of Hulk Hogan's posterior.
Not only that, but he slaps it, baby.
He slaps it. Well, slaps like the side of his thigh. But I mean, you could. Yeah. Oh my gosh! Thank heavens this is an audio podcast.
All right, guys, but now we've saved it for the main event, the crescendo of this show. And this didn't air here, baby. This aired all the way in the land of the rising sun in Japan, Because as we all know, Americans love to do Japanese commercials. In fact, one of future subjects we're going to cover is the Twin Peaks Georgia coffee ads from Japan.
But for now, here's our main man, the American dream made reality, singing about a week.
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday comes again.
毎日、毎日、日立の細長、静か、サラサラ、綺麗な空気、体には細長が気持ちいいんです。日立のビッグフロー、ウェルネス。
I have no idea what they're selling, but I'll take three.
It looks like it's some sort of, well, it's by Hitachi. It looks like it's an air conditioning unit. One of those that you'd put like in a ceiling, like an air conditioner /
yeah.
like a ventilation unit.
Mm-hmm.
But guys, who knew there was two Thursdays in a week?
I wish there were two Thursdays. Thursdays are awesome.
Thursday is when the Ron Burgundy podcast gets released. I'd like to have two Thursdays.
That is both cute and disturbing.
Yeah, because you have the Hulkster laying on a cloud, and then a baby shows up?
Hey, babies make money, okay?
And then after that commercial, you got an ad for Tiny Toon Adventures in Japan? ?
Yeah.
Totally bizarre.
Hey, the Japanese, they love their Tiny Toon Adventures.
They do.
They love themselves some Dizzy Devil.
Oh, man. There was only one more commercial that we could go into. There's plenty of commercials, but I just happened to notice this one. There's a local grocery store here in North Carolina called Harris Teeter, and they got Hulk to do a spot, and they got him to be all smart like.
Harris Teeter hired professional wrestler Hulk Hogan to compare their new Your Home brand of paper towels to the leading brand. First, the leading brand. Scary. Now, the Your Home brand. Ah, there you have it. You see, it's just as hard to intimidate Harris Teeter's Your Home brand of paper towels as it is the leading brand. And to great for spills, Harris Teeter's Your Home brand. The difference is in the savings.
Yeah. 60-year-old Hulk Hogan is intimidating.
What was the purpose of that ad? Because, I mean, why was he, like, flexing in front of two different types of paper towels with no real significant difference between the two?
Well, one was supposed to be the leading brand, and the other was supposed to be the in-house grocery store brand.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not like one fell over or, you know...
To show that they're both the same.
Oh, okay, I get it. To show that the generic is just as good as the name brand.
Right.
That's right, brother.
That's right, brother. Because after eating your Honey Nut Cheerios and painting your paintings and eating your Pasta Mania and you're wiping your baby's bottom after sitting on a cloud, brother, you're going to need the power of pumice and your Harris Teeter, your home paper towels.
I'm surprised that a supermarket in North Carolina got Hulk Hogan instead of Ric Flair. Wouldn't that be more appropriate?
That would be more appropriate, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Ric Flair was busy shilling for something else.
Yeah, Ric Flair was probably too busy with those ads for the North Carolina lottery at that time.
Yes. I was just about to say that.
By the way, guys, Ric Flair commercials, we're going to be doing that in the future.
Can't wait!
Oh, yeah. Oh, especially I can't wait to discuss the Four Horsemen vitamins commercial. Yeah, that's right, kids. The Hulkster wasn't the only wrestler that had his own vitamins back in the day.
So, Greg, I guess you could say Hulk was quite the pitchman.
Yeah, he was quite the pitchman. He was selling you everything from Honey Nut Cheerios to loans to deodorant to Pasta Mania to Pumex and to Hitachi, whatever that thing was with that baby and paper towels. But you know what they all had in common?
What do they all have in common, brother?
Hulk Hogan commercials, they were all things on TV.
You bet they were, brother.
Well, one thing I've learned is, thanks to the Hulkster, I've learned that there are now 2 Thursdays in a week. That is just incredible. And you know what else is incredible? All the shows that are going on. Place to Be Nation, Pop right now. And the newest episode of Diamond Conversations, entitled The Wax Pack. Offer Brad Budge... I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Balugajin? I think that's how you pronounce it? Maybe? I don't know. Anyways, Brad's new book, The Wax Pack, takes you on a journey of capturing stories from players pulled out of a random pack of 1986 Topps cards. Brad went on across the United States in search of these players and finds out more than he anticipated about the heroes of the diamond. Well, I tell you what, I'm down for anything involving old school Topps, although personally, I'm more of a fan of the 1987 Topps with the wood design, although Mike very much disagrees with me. He hates that series because they overproduced that series like crazy, but I don't care. 87 Topps, always the best, and that should be a fun episode of Diamond Conversations. In the latest Laugh in Theater special, the gang reviewed The Naked Gun 2.5, The Smell of Fear, a personal favorite of mine. As always, of course, I love it. I love it! I said I love it! Okay. In this episode of Laugh in Theater special, host Andy Afton is joined by Miranda Berthold and Ben Locke to discuss The Naked Gun 2.5, The Smell of Fear. The gang discusses lobster meat, Botox, Big Bush, talking body parts, luxury mustaches, bad German accents, old cops, and fake concessions. So remember, the truth hurts, but not as much as landing on a bicycle with a seat missing. But it hurts. And in the latest episode, a proper Laugh in Theater, in the 20th episode, Andy is joined by Jordan Duncan of Body Pressure Luck to do a live watch of the 1995 comedy Tommy Boy. Man, that movie is now 25 years old. That is something. The guys discuss Cedar Point Amusement Park. Hey, Mike. Something, another something that'll get you very happy. Cedar Point. Yeah. Rugby. Father-son relationships. Bo Derek. Cow-tipping physical comedy. Road trips through the Midwest. Singing along to the radio in the car. Skinny dipping in motel pools after hours. Guarantees on boxes. Fat guys in little coats. Theme restaurants, Chicago accents, and bee stings. So remember, brothers don't shake, brothers gotta hug. Also, be sure to check out the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which includes a dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE through yesteryear. The feed includes the Place to Be podcast main event, Jenny and the Gems, Body Pressure Luck, PTB, NXT, and so much more. Subscribe today. And while you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed, as well as is the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Freak Out, Driving, Telling Stories, and more. And I know Jenny recently talked on her podcast feed about a subject that hopefully we'll be talking about at the end of the year, Tiger King on Netflix. Oh man, Joe Exotic. What can I say about Joe Exotic? And, of course, Carol Baskin is... Oh my God. I don't want to be near her and the tigers, because she could feed me to the tigers, and I don't want that. Also, check out the new North-South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero and Chad Campbell. It's the new home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Owens Wrestling, and more. We've also kicked off on Place to Be Nation the 2020 stretch project that determines the greatest WCW match ever. You have all year to do research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the PWO message board. And be sure not to forget to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes, bring you articles and topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown and Fox Report, The Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. And don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. And, of course, you can support PlaceToBeNation.com by going over to Amazon.com and clicking on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon, and it'll take you right to Amazon, and it'll help Place to Be Nation at no cost to you. So we've talked about the Dana Carvey Show, or the Diet Mug Root Beer Dana Carvey Show, or the Szechuan Dynasty Dana Carvey Show, or the Pepsi Stuff Dana, or whatever the millions of sponsors in that case only about 5 or 6 associated with PepsiCo and the brands. But anyways, we talked about the Dana Carvey Show, we talked about the various weird commercials the Hulkster has done, and now we talk about a show near and dear to our hearts, another show that involves Robert Smigel on this triad of episodes, as we talk about Comedy Central's TV Funhouse from late 2000, early 2001. Enjoy, folks!
Hi there, Mike here. Thanks for listening, and I hope you're surviving this pandemic, the little crisis we're having right now, just fine. We thank you for finding our show, if you just happen to stumble upon it while looking for podcasts, or if you've been with us since day one, thank you so much. Please stay well, stay healthy, stay at home, and please, if you go out, utilize social distancing. We don't want any of our listeners or anybody to get sick. Please, we need to flatten the curve. And now with that, here's our show, episode 44, submission 172. TV Funhouse.
Comedy Central's TV Funhouse.
Indeed. Comedy Central's TV Funhouse aired from December 6th of 2000 to January 24th of 2001 for 8 episodes. Guys, if you remember last week, we talked about the Dana Carvey Show and a number of people who went on to bigger and better things. We talked about Steve Carell, and we talked about Stephen Colbert. We also mentioned Robert Smigel and Dino Stamatopoulos, among other names. And one thing that we mentioned in the show is they went on to this show, Comedy Central's TV Funhouse, which is basically a spinoff of the somewhat occasionally occurring segment on Saturday Night Live, but also itself was sort of a spoof of children's TV shows, kind of maybe a little bit like Pee Wee's Playhouse, but maybe more like a Romper Room type of TV show.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm glad you agree. And really, this show, it was almost like three shows in one. You had the main premise, every day was a certain day where we're celebrating a holiday or celebrating a certain ethnicity. And it's a little racist. Again, there's stuff that we can get away with 20 years ago, which wouldn't fly now. But also, there was like a subplot, which was the Annapals, who were puppet animals. They were like the characters that lived in the TV Funhouse with the main character named Doug. And then you had like a third type of TV show, because like almost any kids show back in the 60s or 70s or 80s, it was interspersed with cartoons. Now, the base of this show is, like we said, this show was hosted by Doug Dale, and he had Annapal friends. And every day, there was a celebration that Doug was going to have where he dressed up in a certain way, did certain traditions of a certain holiday or a different ethnicity. And he would, the show would open with Doug getting off the street from a vendor, a box that says whatever day it is that day, and it has a costume in it. And, oh, we should mention that Doug is just wearing a pair of tighty whities while he does this. Beautiful image, I know.
That's scary.
Yes, and he's in apparently in New York City.
He's in New York City, a lot of taxis, and here's the thing. Everything in the opening sequence is meant to mimic, like, photo stills.
Yes.
But he's the only one that's in on the joke, so to speak.
Yes. You see the taxis actually drive around him or swerve around him. You see, like, people on the street, you know, being oblivious to him being there, walking past him. On one of the episodes, as Doug was going to give the money to the vendor for that day's box, some guy came by and snatched the money. And you could see, well, it was all set up. You could see Doug holding onto his leg trying to get his money back.
Oh.
After this initial sequence, Doug welcomes us and says what day it is. And he dresses up in a costume, which is very stereotypical of whatever the day's theme is. We'll get to that in a bit. And he introduces us to the Annapals. And the Annapals are just, as I said, they're animal puppet friends of the show, except generally, I think almost on every episode or almost every episode, they weasel their way out of doing the activities for that day with different excuses, different reasons, and get into their own harebrained schemes, as it were. On episode one, which is Western Day, Doug was dressed up as a cowboy, and Doug must wrangle up his own fun while the Annapals ditch him to head for High Time south of the border in Tijuana.
Ooh!
That sounds like a very Annapals thing to do.
Yeah, but what were they doing in Tijuana? They were going to a stereotypical cockfight.
Oh.
Yeah. The cartoon segments on that first episode were Wonder Man, who is basically a ripoff of Superman.
Specifically the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons.
And it looked very grainy. I mean, it had some sense of authenticity. Yeah, it may have been drawn in the 2000 era, but it looked grainy like you'd see in the 60s or late 50s. Yep. And it was a takeoff of Superman, but his sole purpose, his MO, was to get his alter ego laid. What do I mean by that? Oh, you could have a heavyset woman dangling off a building by one arm. You could have some ugly woman in crisis. But who would Wonder Man go and help? Neither of those women. He'd go save the beautiful woman who got into a little kerfuffle with a homeless man. And yeah, he'd take care of the homeless man by throwing him to outer space. And she'd say, oh, well, how can I repay you? Oh, you don't need to repay me. Here's the business card of a friend of mine, and you can repay him by giving him sex. He's been very lonely, very sad since, I don't know if it's because of the divorce or what have you, but yeah, this is how you can repay me, by getting this guy, his alter ego, laid. Again, we can get away with a little more in 2000.
Yeah.
This is pre-Me Too, folks.
Oh, this is pre a lot of things. Yes. And then after that, you had Mnemonics. And this is a segment which recurred on a couple of episodes besides the first episode. You guys know what mnemonics are.
Yeah, they're little like anagrams or backronyms that will help you commit something to memory.
Yeah, they're like if you're in music, and I'm sure, you know, Chico did this because he was in music for a while when he was younger. Same with me when I was in band. I'm sure you remember every good boy does fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's a mnemonic, where the first letter of each word represents a different. What is this? A different note? Isn't the it's, oh the on the treble clef?
It's the notes on the treble.
Yeah, it's the notes that are on the lines of the treble clef. So E, G, B, D, F.
Yeah.
Because main C is the first line is a line below the first line below E. So there'd be different mnemonics.
Another example would be phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. I cannot in good conscience repeat what they went for.
Okay, well, you know what? Then we're not going to do that one.
Hold on. Let's do this one. Okay. Egg, larva, pupa, adult. Enemas, loosen, plugged asses. That's nice and safe.
Oh no! There's an even better one.
Oh, there is another.
Oh, the one after it actually is very good. Mouth, esophagus, stomach, gallbladder, small intestine, large intestine, rectum, anus. What does that turn into?
Oh no! Mouth, esophagus, stomach, gallbladder, small intestine, large intestine, rectum, anus becomes. Mom eats squirrel guts because she is living in rural Arkansas.
Works for me. I remember the body parts because of that. So, yeah, that's actually the clean ones we can share. There are other ones that, no. We don't want you guys leaving. We want to keep it reasonably clean. Yep. So, yeah, the subplot of all this is the Anipals go south of the border to Tijuana, and they end up at a cockfight. And one of the Anipals, Chicky, who's a chicken, believe it or not, somebody named Chicky is a chicken, gets lured into going into the cockfight, and it doesn't end well. As cockfights generally don't end well.
Nope.
Yeah, Chicky gets beaten and bruised, and it's not a good ending.
No, it's not.
There's also a occasionally occurring segment with Doug and a snake called Terrence, where he's eaten something. Terrence has eaten something, I should say. And the idea is, guess what Terrence ate? And, it looks like a little kid playing baseball. But what happens when Terrence coughs it up? It's a bunch of dead mice.
Figures.
And we also should mention one other character who appears on almost every episode, voiced by Robert Smigel, sounds just like Triumph the Dog, a dog named Zabu. Looks like a husky of some sort. Husky or Malamute. Zabu's only goal in life is he wants to catch his tail. And he does it by trying to trick the tail by dressing up in different costumes. And so frequently when you see Zabu, you see him just spinning round and round and round trying to chase his tail, and he just never gets it.
Oh.
But then after that, I think Greg has stuff to say. The baby, the immigrant, and the guy on mushrooms.
Yes, this is probably my favorite segment from this show.
So tell us about the baby, the immigrant, and the guy on mushrooms.
Okay, so what this was the mother of the baby would leave her cat in charge of watching the baby along with an immigrant and a guy on mushrooms.
Ah.
Oh.
Oh.
And the thing of it is, you would think that watching a baby, an immigrant, and a guy on mushrooms would be easy, except they get excited really, really easily.
Yeah, they get easily distracted by things, causing them to wander off while the cat is distracted by something.
And in this initial episode, the baby, the immigrant, and the guy on mushrooms actually end up on a construction site, walking on a steel beam, not unlike something you would have seen in like a Tom and Jerry cartoon or back in the old days. I'm thinking like a silent movie, like Buster Keaton or somebody like
or
that?
Charlie Chaplin or someone.
Charlie Chaplin, that's who, yeah, exactly. And ultimately, Artemis the cat saves the day, albeit, you know, getting in some sort of injury, some sort of scrap while doing it. But he gets the baby, the immigrant, and the guy in mushrooms back in the house by the time the homeowner comes back home.
Yes, and usually she brings something back for the baby, the immigrant, and the guy on mushrooms.
Yes.
And then it'd be like, ah, oh, oh.
And the joke is that they would get something that was meant for somebody else. The baby would get a mini Statue of Liberty, the immigrant would get a lava lamp, and the guy on mushrooms would get a rattle. At least on the first episode, yeah. And what would Artemis get? A toy mouse.
Ah.
Which he can't use because he's all injured, wrapped up in bandages.
Right.
That sucks for Artemis.
It does.
There's one more segment on the first episode we're going to talk about. The last interstitial segment of episode one is all about a police officer's life, and it's something like you'd see on Sesame Street back in the day, but this is TV Funhouse, so it isn't a normal segment.
I remember the policeman jumping into the East River in one part of this.
I'm watching it right now, yeah.
Yes, the police officer jumps into the East River. He's prancing around the police station naked. He's crying himself to sleep. He's sitting at his desk eating a big bowl of chili.
Hey, you said that police officer was striding around naked?
He was prancing around naked in the police station, yes.
You think he ever ran into Herb Abrams?
Oh,
jeez.
Oh, no.
That's a subject for another show.
And he ends up trying to shoot the mayor. Because, hey, assassination is hilarious.
Yeah. But he doesn't control the weather. That's a chef.
Yes. Oh, the chefs control the weather. And a fun thing about most episodes, not every episode, I think every episode but one had this, is the end credits. It reused the same type of music as the opening theme, but put lyrics to it, which basically summarized the entire episode. Not necessarily the cartoons, but the different stuff the Annapals got into and what happened with Doug. And I think we're going to throw in the closing theme to the first episode right here so you know what we're talking about. So that's just the first episode. The second episode is Hawaiian Day. Doug has a luau all by himself while the Annapals help Chicky rescue his son from a cult. Yeah, this was not unlike the Heaven's Gate type of cult you had back a little bit before this time. Heaven's Gate would have been probably about 97-ish, 96-ish, and this was 2000. Yeah, Chicky's son ran away and joined a cult and ultimately ended up on a spaceship.
Oh.
And before they left on the spaceship, every one of the chicks got castrated, and you saw a big pile of little chicken testicles. Not real. Not real. It looked like kicks. Don't know if you want to eat those in milk or not.
No.
The first cartoon in this show is Kidder, Downey, and Hesh, which is basically a private investigative firm made up of Margot Kidder, Robert Downey Jr., and Anne Heche.
Now, for background, this is in 2000.
Yes.
When Robert Downey Jr. was not exactly clean.
Yeah, because if you'll remember, like, by 2008, by the time he was going to do the first Iron Man movie, like, Marvel Studios had to get assurances that Robert Downey Jr. would be A-OK to do it.
And he's been clean ever since. So.
Yeah, basically.
And in demand.
Oh, yes. I mean, now he's had so much cred from doing Marvel movies that he could do something like Doolittle, and like no one will care.
Right.
So what the general idea of this private investigative service was is that Margot Kidder and Robert Downey Jr. and Anne Heche basically break into people's homes looking for a lost dog. But they're so strung out on medications or what have you that they think they're looking for different animals, a tiger, an owl. And it was a little... It's definitely dated. It's not something you'd necessarily associate nowadays because Robert Downey Jr., as we mentioned, is just a humongous star. Anne Heche sort of has been kind of off the radar for the last like 15 to 20 years. And Margot Kidder, I think, is deceased.
Yes, she was deceased. She was deceased. And no joke, she was fed by wolves. Isn't that timely, considering we've been watching Tiger King this week?
Speak for yourself. I don't know what I'm missing, and I don't want to know if I want to know what I'm missing.
Oh, you want to see Tiger King, baby? You need to see it.
Oh, no.
That might be an entry later on. We'll want to see what happens.
We'll talk about it after the show.
Next is a bit called "Overcoming Bowel Movements: A Teenager's Guide to Self-Control."
Overcoming Bowel Movements is a PSA not unlike maybe a movie you might have seen in school when you were younger, especially something from like the 50s or 60s if you were of a certain age where you'd pull out the film reel and watch a five-minute movie on why you shouldn't do this, and Johnny shows us the repercussions if you drink and drive or if you do something bad. Well, that's sort of like this. Imagine if this was an educational film where the topic is something like self-stimulation, if you will. But no, we're not talking about self-stimulation. We're talking about bowel movements. And they're talking about how bad it is to have bowel movements before you get married. And you've got to resist the temptation of having bowel movements.
Rather apropos, given that they talk a lot about toilet paper on this film. And when the time is right, having a bowel movement will be richer and more meaningful.
Yeah, that sounds just like an educational film back in the day.
It ends with a guy committing himself to a roll of toilet paper. You guys remember toilet paper, right?
Yeah, before it was in demand 3 weeks ago. I remember the days we can get toilet paper. We can get more than one roll at a time. And then the last cartoon on this episode... This was funny. It was a classic cartoon commercial. Mind you, the first letter in each of those three words wasn't a C, it was a K. Yeah, you do the math. Three Ks. I had nothing to do with that, though. It's just something I noticed. And it was called Attack. And again, if you were of a certain age, probably a kid of the 80s, maybe even early 90s, do you remember Raid used to have these ads where the roaches or the bugs, animated bugs, would be in an area and, they'd say, Raid, and then there'd be this explosion and, the bugs would be wiped out?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, think of that, except it's called Attack, not Raid. But also imagine that the bugs had real lives. They had families. So you'd have a hand holding a can of Raid going to different events that bug families would be at. Or not just bug families, but that bugs might be in. So one segment had an elderly bug couple sitting on a porch talking about their retirement and their golden years. And here's the can of attack spraying them dead. And the husband bug goes over to the dead wife bug and says, I'll be with you forever through eternity. And, you know, he's like, you know, wheezing, not really in good health, but he's still alive. And here comes the guy with the can again, spraying the bug dead. another scene has an elderly bug in a hospital getting his last rites. Oh, this is just bad. Why is everybody dying? It's all elderly bugs. It was an elderly bug getting his last rites. And here comes the can of attack trying to spray it. Except it's out of compression, out of air. So what the hand does to kill the bugs is it uses the can and smashes it against the bugs on the bed.
It got dark, quickly.
It was dark, but it's also very, very funny in my opinion. So ultimately in the subplot, at the end, Chicky's son goes up into the spaceship with the aliens into the cult, never to be heard from again.
Aww.
Yeah, and Hawaiian Day, it didn't end well. It never ends well for Doug. That's one thing we should note.
No, it's never going to be a good ending for Doug in any of these episodes.
There was one segment on the Hawaii Day episode which might have pissed off people a little bit. Doug decides to make a Hawaiian flag, and how does he do it? He takes an American flag, identifies the 50th star, because Hawaii is the 50th state. The 50th star is in the lower right-hand corner in the shield of stars, apparently. And he cuts out that star from an American flag and staples it onto a piece of cardboard, and there's the Hawaiian flag. A ripped up piece of an American flag stapled on a green piece of cardboard. And I don't know if you guys know about flag code.
I know a little bit about the flag code, yeah.
Yeah, you're not supposed to desecrate the flag like that. I mean, we're not even getting into burning the flag, but, you know, there's proper ways of disposing of flags and... I don't remember in Boy Scouts being told that you can cut up a flag with a pair of scissors for fun.
Yeah, it's illegal and highly frowned upon, last I checked.
Yeah, not very patriotic. And again, if this aired about a year later, because you got to remember what happened in 2001. So we could get away with it in 2000, but not a year later.
Yeah, you could get away with it because this was during the Bush Gore recount. But no, if it was like December 2001, no,
absolutely not. No,
nuh-uh.
Okay, episode 3, Chico.
Episode 3, it's Christmas.
Yay,
Indiana pals! Yay, and guess what? Doug is filled with all sorts of cheer, so the Annapals decide to tap his spine to get a piece of that cheer. Meanwhile, one of Chicky's sons helps to turn the cheer into powder, and unfortunately, he goes missing, and the powder's there, but the Annapals snort it and get addicted to powdered Christmas cheer.
Oh, it isn't just sniffing it and snorting it. Chicky's son actually tells all the Annapals, oh, snorting it isn't the way to enjoy it. You've got to freebase it. So over a Bunsen burner, they start doing this powdered crystal spinal fluid cheer, if you will. And they get high as a kite.
And they just go, and they just, you know, do... They do New York City up right.
Oh, they're
basically shouting Christmas carols to everyone.
They're full of Christmas cheer, wink, wink.
Yeah.
And the cartoons in this episode, the first one was called Tingles the Christmas Tension. And what it was was animation very similar to Rankin Bass, if you remember the Christmas specials they did back in the 60s.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And if you remember Christmas Time for the Jews that Darlene Love did for Saturday Night Live 25 years ago or so.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Animation was very similar to that. Except it had to do with Tingles the Christmas Tension, which is basically people losing their attitude over Christmas. Yeah, because you know they're frustrated in bed or because they're having job troubles or what have you. Yeah. And then after Christmas Day, goodbye the Christmas Tension, you get the After Christmas Depression. Aww.
Aww.
But also, looking at this in one way actually gives me a theory as to why this show didn't last too long. We'll get to that later, why this only lasted 8 episodes, even though it was really, again, sort of ahead of its time, kind of, sort of. Maybe pushing boundaries. Let's also add that.
Yeah. Let's just say Comedy Central could only air this when they aired it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then the other segment that was on this episode was places to look for your Christmas presents. This truly was like a Christmas-themed episode. And it was different places where you could find Christmas presents hiding in your house, like in the oven or in the kitchen wall or inside a toy that you got last year. Kind of goofy. But yeah, dear old Doug, after the Annapals tapped the spinal fluid from his spine, he was paralyzed from the waist down. And but he was still in the Christmas spirit, though. He decked the tree. The first 2 feet of it.
Yeah.
When you can't move your legs, you really can't go above like the base of the tree.
No.
So the base of the tree looked nice.
Yeah.
And then the fourth episode. Oh, this is a great one. Excuse the name. We're going to just get that out of the way first. Mexicans Day. I apologize. That's what it's called. Again, 2000 was a different time than 2020. On Mexicans Day, the Annapals appeared on, and here's a relic to Days Gone By, the Sally Jesse Raphael Show.
Well, not if you watch Nosy Guys.
No, Nosy, there's a couple episodes I've seen that have popped up. Not a lot. They like showing Springer and Wilkos and Maury. But they show occasional Sally Jesse Show.
Oh, speaking of Maury, just wait until we get later on in the series.
Oh, no.
That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, no. Okay, getting back on topic. So the Annapals appeared on the Sally Jesse Raphael Show to help get an endangered lizard get laid.
Oh, how nice.
Aw.
Yeah, except the problem is the endangered lizard had absolutely no desire to get laid, and that's even in spite of the female endangered lizard getting a makeover.
Ooh!
They just put a bow on her.
Aw. Wow.
No desire to get laid, but also the other reason that the Annapals wanted to get this endangered lizard laid is because the sperm and the eggs of these rare endangered lizards, they'll make money. And so they got greedy and wanted to make money off their good friend, this endangered chameleon-like lizard. And Doug was at home celebrating Mexicans Day, pretty much by himself.
Well, he wasn't by himself totally.
Well, pretty much by himself, but he did have a friend in the form of Juan, a worm, and a bottle of tequila.
Yep.
No, not much stereotyping there.
Not really.
The cartoons that day, oh my gosh. The first one was called Fetal Scooby-Doo.
Oh.
Yeah. Imagine every character in this episode of Scooby-Doo as a fetus with umbilical cords attached. Yeah. That wasn't the funny part. The funny part was next. Joe Camel, or actually Joe Camel.
Yes.
It was a takeoff of Pokemon, which was done by the R.J. Reynolds Corporation as a way of retiring Joe Camel, but not retiring Joe Camel. So he was turned into a Pokemon-type creature called Jokamel or Joe Camel. And all the characters in this Pokemon spoof looked like genitalia. Joe Camel's nose looked like a big penis. And there were characters who looked like a pair of breasts and who looked like a behind. And yeah, let's just say that they were doing stuff which those body parts do. We'll just keep it at that.
Oh, I'm watching this in live. I'm watching this in live in real time here. Yeah, I can attest to everything that Mike is saying. And the bonus is there are commercials within the show advertising Jokamel everything.
Yeah, and then wait till you get to the end. The end advertisements slash like the end of the show is all the different Joe Camel products you can get, but not cigarettes, yet they show cigarette packs in the in the little in showing what the products are. Okay, Chico.
This ain't even right.
It's not right.
No, it is not right.
It's wrong in a number of ways. It is. I mean, I'll admit, I laughed. I thought it was hilarious, but it's not necessarily appropriate for everybody.
I don't think it's appropriate for anybody.
You could make that case too. And then the last segment on this episode was mnemonics. Again, more mnemonics in case you need more goofy ways of remembering different things. And at the end, Doug celebrates Mexican days with Juan the Tequila Worm, and he ends up eating Juan the Tequila Worm at the end. Well, you're supposed to eat the worm.
Yes, you are. I was just about to say.
Yeah. So, RIP Juan, but it was for a good cause, my buddy. And then episode 5, I need to put in the second DVD, because that's just disc 1.
Yeah. Well, while you do that, I can tell you right now it is New Year's Resolutions / Caveman Day.
Oh, yes. The Annapals spend almost the entire episode in a sauna saying what their New Year's resolutions are. Some good, some bad.
But all of them are probably broken within the first 5 minutes.
No, actually, some lasted some time. Hojo, who's a turtle, wants to learn how to play the saxophone. That doesn't go very well because turtles are small and saxophones are big. Fogey, the dog, must resist eating his own poop and goes as far as buying a product known as I Can't Believe It's Not Poop. But it is poop. Meanwhile, Doug builds a dinosaur out of baby back ribs, and Rocky the Fish takes a group of kids to visit a cookie factory. Oh, I got stuff to say about that.
Oh, boy.
That was goofy. It wasn't necessarily just a cookie factory. They also did cakes, and basically, with this group of kids, everything was, go ahead, kids, try it. So there'd be raw cookie dough. Go ahead, kids. Have a sample. Go try some. And then there'd be regular cookies. And then, oh, well, here's the ingredients we use to make the cookies. Here's butter, Crisco, and margarine. Go have some butter, margarine, and Crisco, kids.
Oh.
And then near the end, a chef was decorating a cake, a birthday cake for somebody. And Rocky the Fish says, here, let me decorate it for you. And what does Rocky the Fish do? He spurts out Roe, trying to spell happy birthday. Except he only gets about as far as about the I in birthday. and then just totally ruins it. Because, well, you got to remember, Rocky's a fish. He needs water to survive.
Yeah.
So kids had to splash water on him. And so the cake's all wet and ruined. And there's just this fake, we'll assume it's fake, row everywhere. And it doesn't spill anything. It's a mess. But, hey, the kids had a good day at the cookie factory. And, the main part of the episode for Caveman Day was just Doug building a dinosaur out of baby back rib bones. Doug's costume ended up eating the remains of the baby back rib bones because Doug's costume was made up of animals, cats and dogs, puppets, mind you. No animals were harmed in the filming of the show that were all super glued or hot glued together. So all these puppets started eating the bones of this dinosaur. The first cartoon here, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's offensive.
It's Mischievous Mitchell.
A takeoff of Dennis the Menace. Except Mischievous Mitchell is extremely, extremely racist. He had a plan to feed a Jewish family ham. So when things go awry, the neighbor, Mr. Wilton, he comes to get his supplies that Mitchell stole from his garage. And while trying to gather up his stuff, a paint can flies, lands on his head, and a paintbrush flies and lands on his mouth. And ultimately, he looks like Hitler.
Yeah.
Again, we can't really get away with these jokes in 2020.
No.
And we barely got away with it in 2000. So the other cartoon on this episode was pretty much a takeoff of music band cartoons at the time, like how the Jacksons had a cartoon and the Beatles had a cartoon. And what was the other one that you mentioned, Chico?
The Osmonds.
The Osmonds. Oh my gosh! Yes, everybody had a cartoon.
The Osmonds had a cartoon. Jeez.
Everybody had a cartoon back in the '70s. Yep. So they took off on this by doing a Black Sabbath cartoon. And mind you, this is about a year and a half, 2 years before the Osbournes became really popular.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, they showed Ozzy having a very bizarre side. Black Sabbath went on vacation to Hawaii, and Ozzy asked about why people were getting rings of flowers on their head, and he said, "Oh, well, that's a lay." And what does Ozzy say? "I'm going to get laid," and he starts going to have relations with a Hawaiian girl with a big posterior. Yeah, it's basically making fun of Ozzy Osbourne and a lot of sex jokes. Apparently, Black Sabbath, not just Ozzy, had a lot of sex back in the day.
Yeah.
And just like any of these goofy cartoons, they had a goofy pet sidekick, Doom Doom. Again, a takeoff of cartoons from, well, 25 years ago back then, but 45 years now. It was a thing on TV, for sure.
We're going to cover most of those.
Hold on. If the Osmonds cartoon is really a thing, why the heck have we added it?
Adding it. Meanwhile, we have another round of mnemonics. Your dear, dear friend. For example, the circulatory system. Heart, arteries, capillaries, veins. You could use Henry's Always Craving Vomit.
Episode 6, and actually this is like a two-part episode, but it's two different days involved here. Yeah. This is Safari Day, where the Annapals totally blow off Doug, and they go to Atlantic City. And why are they going to Atlantic City? Fogey's old friend is there, Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. And while in Atlantic City, Chicky falls in love with a chimp prostitute. So the Annapals went to go see Triumph playing at I apologize for saying this name. The Trump Marina. One of the many Trump properties in Atlantic City back in the early 2000s.
So we can be assured that that probably went bankrupt.
Oh, absolutely. If it didn't get bankrupt, it probably got swept away with Superstorm Sandy back in 2012. Atlantic City nowadays is not like the Atlantic City in 2000 or even like the 80s. And while in Atlantic City, the Annapals, they met a superstar by the name of Robert Goulet.
Jingle bells, Batman smells, Robin laid an egg, Batmobile lost its wheel, and the Joker got away. Hey, I'm sorry, kid. Nothing?
No, nothing. I'm sorry.
Oh. No.
That's
one of the best Simpsons segments ever.
Sorry. He's not wrong, you know.
I'm so sorry. So this episode basically just features the exploits of the Annapals in Atlantic City, ultimately meeting up with Robert Goulet. Meanwhile, back at home, Doug gets a horrible rash from a tropical plant. Yeah, and actually he meets a mosquito friend, and the mosquito friend sucks like all the blood out of Doug. And you can see that the backside of the mosquito is expanding like a balloon, sucking away every ounce of blood in Doug's body.
All right, now here we go with one of the most horrifying segments ever on this show.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you go, I'm not going to say it. I don't want to say it.
Okay, I'll say it, but this is staying in. You're saying I'm not going to say it.
No, I'm not going to say it.
Good. I'll say it. Porn for kids.
And do we want to describe how this segment begins?
It begins like any other like children's educational type TV show with them, you know, frolicking around and singing a jingle, you know, called Porn for Kids.
And then the kids say, "We want porn." Yay.
Yeah, and they actually showed what I'm going to guess is a porn from, I'm going to guess, probably the early 90s.
Yes.
Because it was something like Silence of the Loins, I believe.
Silence of the Gams.
Well, loins, gams, same difference. It's a friggin' porno movie. And let's just say it was in a doctor's office. The doctor is on the phone making a call, and next thing you know, he's standing up without a shirt on. And he's... Use your imagination.
Yeah. Can we talk about the second cartoon now?
Well, I do want to add one other thing.
Okay.
It's called Porn for Kids. That's what it's actually called on the DVDs. But the network changed it to Porn for Everyone.
They didn't want people getting angry over a segment called Porn for Kids.
Yeah. And yeah, we're going to quickly move away from that and talk about a two-part cartoon called Steadman, or Steadman.
Steadman, and then Oprah's Steadman.
Voiced by Tim Meadows.
Yes. And if you don't know who Steadman is, again, back in like 2000, there were plenty of rumors involving Steadman and Oprah being a couple or getting married, but just never pulling the trigger for whatever reason. And so this sort of played off of that. Steadman actually was a secret agent in this episode. And what happened is, anytime Oprah wanted to get amorous with Steadman, "Oh, the president of France just called me. I need to go to France immediately and fight Professor," whatever the professor's name, Professor Evil or Professor Doom or whatever. So Oprah would be like, "Okay, what do you need in order to beat Professor Doom?" "Oh, well, I need money." And so she'd just be like going into every nook and cranny where she has money saved. "Here, is this enough money? $1.3 million? Yeah, just fine." He takes a plane over to France And next thing you know, he's on the beach wearing a little bikini while five or six bikini-clad women are around him willing to do whatever he wants. And Oprah gets some sort of vibe that something's wrong. So she goes to France to find him and finds Stedman in a hotel room with one of the bikini-clad women. And Oprah's like, what are you doing with this woman? And he said, woman, this is one of the arch enemies of Professor Doom or whoever it was. And he karate kicks the bikini-clad woman out the window. And now Oprah's all happy. Oh, okay, now that we're alone, let's make love. And Oprah gets down to some lingerie. And at first, Stedman kicks invisible objects, which he claims are invisible robots. And in the meantime, try to kick a quote-unquote invisible robot. He kicks Oprah in the head. She's unconscious. And he makes his brave escape. Yeah. So it was just a takeoff of, Oprah's lack of love or the lack of commitment by Stedman and Oprah. But as Greg said, Tim Meadows did a darn fine job of Stedman in this cartoon.
Yes, he did.
But now this continues into the seventh episode, because the seventh episode is Astronaut Day, and the Annapals are still in Atlantic City. There's a little bit of a problem for Triumph now because, Triumph, this is like an overtone for a lot of the shows, in case you haven't noticed. Triumph was trying to get it on with a poodle.
Again!
And unfortunately, this time, Triumph got stuck in a poodle. Stuck. In other words, stuck. Yeah, yes.
He was stuck.
Use your imagination. He was stuck
inside a poodle. We get it.
Yes.
We know.
And this happened right when he was going to do his big show in front of Robert Goulet. So he had a towel covering the poodle. And, the poodle was live. So it wasn't a puppet poodle. It was a live poodle with Triumph mounted, for lack of a better phrase, on the poodle's back. And so once the poodle started moving around, there goes the cover. And you see Triumph stuck, again, if you will, to the poodle. And Robert Goulet, all the Annapals and Triumph thought, oh gosh, he's blown it. The poodle comes over onto Robert Goulet's table and starts eating the sausage that Robert Goulet was eating. And Triumph's like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Goulet. This has been so horrible. And Robert Goulet says, what are you talking about? This is the funniest thing I've ever seen. So he was a success in the mind of Robert Goulet. And meanwhile, during Astronaut Day, back at home, Doug tries achieving weightlessness, and he does this in a variety of ways, including sticking a helium tank up his butt. Well, figuring that helium, makes things rise. He thought if he filled himself with helium, he'd rise. And then he thought he was too heavy, so he decided to eat a bunch of weight loss pills, which were also laxatives. So for most of the rest of the show, you saw him on the toity. Just speaking the truth. And in this episode, the segments included the Safety Gang, which was not unlike some kids' cartoon show, but it was being very ironic about trying to be safe. There was actually one segment where one of the Safety Gang members was meeting up with, I believe the name was Outlitty. It was an outlet puppet. And wet fingers. And the idea was, don't touch the outlet with the wet fingers. You have to be at least 3 inches away or else. Bzz. Yeah. And the Safety Gang at the end were like running towards the camera like you might see on some shows. Except there's one problem. The stage had spike shaped props that were pointed towards the kids. So the last thing you see is, you see like the kids running into the spikes, the film stopped right before there, but you could see the fear in some of the kids' eyes that they're going to get their eye poked out or they're going to run headfirst into a spike. Again, a very ironic type of children's message there. You also had a takeoff of Behind the Music, if you remember that from VH1 back in the day, called The Great Leaders of History. And this was an episode about George Washington. And basically they talked about his exploits, his supposed friendship with Napoleon, and different things he did in his life, which were all false. In case you couldn't tell it was false, one of the events happened in like 1847, which, well, George Washington died in 1799. So, yeah, just a little fake. Don't take it as authentic. And then you had sort of another superhero segment called Captain Marginal, which wasn't really all that fun. Yes. Okay, Greg has stuff to say.
Okay.
I was going to say, I didn't think it was all that funny, but obviously I think you disagree.
No, I disagree, because this is supposed to be a take. Chico, you'll back me up on it. This is supposed to be a takeoff of Shazam.
No, I agree. I get that. I fully understand that.
I totally get it.
So this is a takeoff of the origin story of Billy Batson when he meets the wizard Shazam.
All you have to do is say my name. Scroopa.
Scroopa! Scroopa is an acronym, you see. The S is for Sperms of Endearment. The K is for King Dong. The R is for Romancing the Bone. The E is for E.T. The A, the extra text.
Yeah. And so on and so forth.
And then the Billy Batson type character swears that he'll never, ever use his those powers ever. This he swears.
Which fits right in with another exploit for the baby, the immigrant, and the guy on mushrooms.
This time they're at an airport.
Yeah, they end up, the baby, the immigrant, and the guy on mushrooms end up on a baggage carousel. And the next thing you know, they're on a plane. And Artemis the cat freaks out. How am I going to get on the plane? He somehow ends up on the landing gear and gets up on the plane a little scratched up. But there's the baby, the immigrant, and the guy on mushrooms going into the cockpit. Again, hey, remember, this is before 9/11.
Yep, you could easily get on a cockpit with no problems. So they get to
basically
the cockpit.
Basically, this whole segment ages like milk.
Okay, so they get to the cockpit. Artemis sees them. He panics. He crashes into them. But meanwhile, the stewardess is holding a tray full of Fable, full of coffee, which the coffee ends up on the instruments, short-circuiting, while they go, ah, oh, oh. And the plane is descending down, and then the best part is you see the baby, the immigrant, and the guy on mushrooms' faces just like flap as they descend.
But somehow they manage to save the plane by just like randomly hitting buttons.
Yeah, because that's how it works.
Yeah, and then they all ended up back at home, where mom brought each of them, again, a gift.
The baby gets an American flag, the immigrant gets a tie-dye Florida shirt, and the guy on mushroom gets a binky.
And Artemis still gets another mouse that he can't use.
Ah.
The final episode. The final episode is...
Here we go. Chinese New Year's.
Yeah, the final episode is Chinese New Year Day. Yeah, I can smell the racism from a mile away.
This isn't going to be racist at all. I don't know what you're talking about.
Buckle in. The Annapales ditch the funhouse to enter the lucrative, glamorous world of laboratory animal testing as Doug celebrates Chinese New Year's Day and makes fireworks with a panda. There is no racism in those last five words at all. Makes fireworks with a panda. No, that's not racist at all. This being the series finale, the set was struck by detonating a puppet panda full of innards for realism. Ew! On the set, splattering everywhere. Staged as a satirical accident, Doug replied after with the resignation cut, which he did on the episode. Disgusting to say the least. But there were some special guest stars. You had John Ritter, who was a speaker for the cosmetic company Claire DeLon, which was doing the animal testing. And you also had George Wendt doing something similar, speaking at this Claire DeLon convention.
Mike, was he eating beans?
No, George Wendt wasn't eating beans.
Oh, was he in a movie where he was eating beans?
No. And I don't want to eat beans with George Wendt either. I'm sorry.
Well, would you like to take a survey, Mike? We could do that. We could make a movie with George Wendt eating beans.
I'd watch it.
Well,
that's an Animaniacs joke, kids.
Oh, I think everybody who's listening to this gets that reference. I think you're underestimating our audience. So what happened is when the Anipals went to Claire DeLon to do this lab testing, there were, and again, this is something you can get away with in 2001, in early 2001. You can't get away with it in late 2001. There were animal terrorists, including one rabbit who was a suicide bomber. These terrorists freed the Anipals because of the conditions in the Claire DeLon lab, and they ended up going up to the Waldorf Astoria Hotel where this Claire DeLon meeting was with John Ritter and George Wendt, and they basically turned it into a hostage terrorism situation. Again, you do it 9 months later, you're going to get letters. This would have never aired. But early 2001, America's just fine at that point. And this would have been about 2.5 years before John Ritter passed away, which is a little sad in retrospect. No,
it would be about exactly,
It was fall 2003 when he passed.
Yeah, exactly 2.5 years.
Well, yeah, it was 9/11 to 2003, to be more specific.
Oh, my. Oh, wow. I forgot it was on the anniversary of second-year anniversary of 9/11.
Yeah. So then you have the terrorists involved in this episode. It makes it even more weird. The cartoon segments in this episode, we have Wonder Man again. And as I mentioned, Wonder Man saved a beautiful woman from a blind homeless person, sending him to outer space, and in return, he gave this beautiful woman the phone number of his alter ego, and, well, let's just say he had a happy ending.
In more ways than one.
There was a segment based on different science and nature type of shows that you would have seen, like, I'm thinking Crocodile Hunter, stuff like that, called What Do We Know? So, yeah, What Do We Know gets into talking about, you know, what do we know about cactuses and pyramids and different types of inquiries about science. But you can tell that they weren't on location in Morocco or Egypt, because the pyramid which was used clearly is of the Luxor in Las Vegas. Something mm-hmm. Chico and I have seen plenty of times the last few years.
They've got a great buffet.
So I've heard.
Never been there for the buffet. Okay, I'll have to remember that for next time I'm out there. It was just a takeoff of different science shows from back in the day. So, Greg, you noticed a couple of famous faces in this the spoof.
Yeah, because obviously Bob Odenkirk is in this segment asking, what do we know? But the professor in the segment is played by Scott Adsit, who most of you will know as Pete from 30 Rock, and the voice of Baymax in Big Hero 6.
Also in this episode, we had an ad for a fake item, right, Chico?
Yep, it's called Nurture You, Mom and Dad. for the kid whose parents are always busy with stuff.
I'd even take it a step further and say parents that just don't care about their kids.
Yep. And all I could say is it's heartwarming and at the same time very sad.
Yes, it is. It's absolutely very sad.
Oh, look, the parents are totally approving of this.
Well, because the kid's having fun.
Guess what? They also wet themselves.
Oh, yes. If you remember, there are dolls that made messes on themselves. They did that with these parents. So they had parents who actually wore giant diapers and looked like they wet themselves. So, yeah, this is like a spoof of like every baby doll commercial from back in the day. The other cartoon in this episode was a little weird. It was called Pablo Picasso, Part One, The Cubist Years. And, again, this is very bizarre. It had different animation than the rest of the show. It didn't look like your standard ambiguously gay duo type of animation. This was very different. And, again, the humor for me just wasn't there. Showing Pablo Picasso in different stages of his life and his cubism era, being attacked by a lion, driving in a car with a crudely animated duck. I didn't really totally get this. But yeah. Then again, if I didn't really get that, you know, maybe that means I understood the rest of the show, which in itself is, you know, kind of creepy because it's so absurd. And that was TV Funhouse. Definitely wasn't like the TV Funhouse you saw on SNL. Definitely didn't have the ambiguously gay duo. I don't think anything on this show made it to the Saturday Night Live TV Funhouse.
No.
Nope.
Which is a bit of a shame. But also, I think, as we could tell in that last episode, where they actually blew up the panda and the panda was filled with innards, and they messed up the entire set, I think they sort of got the idea that they were going to be canceled right from the outset. There was not going to be a season two.
No.
No. This was one of those classic, and again, a callback to last week in the Dana Carvey show. This is one of those classic, screw it, we're going to get canceled anyway, let's just do the show we want to do.
If you look into why the show was canceled, Robert Smigel actually mentions that Comedy Central believed in the show, but was disappointed in its budget. Which you can understand, I mean, given there's like 10 minutes of animation in this show, or even like 7 or 8 minutes of animation, that's not going to be cheap. But also just the number of guest stars. We mentioned Robert Goulet for 2 episodes. You had George Wendt. You had John Ritter. You had Joe Frazier in one of the parts of the Atlantic City episode, because he played a preacher.
Oh, that's right, really? He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That was at the end of part one.
Yeah. So just looking at the guest you had there, surely Robert Goulet was not cheap.
And neither was Joe Frazier.
Joe Frazier probably wasn't. I mean, George Wendt and John Ritter probably were, but I mean, still, they're two legends of comedy on two classic sitcoms.
And probably Smigel knows them both.
Yeah, and the beauty of it all is, much like the show itself, they didn't take themselves seriously at all. Like, I have an example here. Every show began with a content warning, obviously, except for one episode where the content warning was in the middle of the show, saying this content warning should have been at the beginning. Your discretion is advised.
And if you're interested in seeing this, it did get released on DVD, and you're not going to believe how much it's going for.
How much is it going for?
Well, I hope you're sitting.
I know how much it's going to be.
How much is it going to be?
It's going to be cheap, cheap, cheap.
I found an auction that closed about 2 months ago, and it sold for the grand price of one penny.
Are you kidding me?
I wish I was. A used copy was sold for one penny on eBay back in January.
Yeah.
I did the research. You can find this on eBay generally for about $5 or less. Didn't some place have this? A streaming place have this?
I don't know if a streaming place had it, but I know you can find 7 out of the 8 episodes in total on YouTube. The Christmas episode is the live action bits are on YouTube, but none of the animated bits made it.
Yeah, and if you and just to let you know, on Amazon, it is available brand new for DVD for $8.40, or you could buy the cheapest price used is $2.90.
Or you could save $2.89 and buy it for a penny on eBay. And actually, I think I saw live auctions for this at a penny right now. So if you want to see this, you can find it for, well, say it, Noel.
Cheap.
Yes. Oh, a callback to a previous episode. That's fun.
We like callbacks.
Well, Chica, let's put this baby to rest.
Okay. I guess, what can I say about TV Funhouse? It was a show that was tailor-made for its time. In 2020, you couldn't get away with airing 5 seconds of it. It was tailor-made for its time and its time slot, Sunday nights at 11:30. But back in 2000... Keys, get over here.
It was a thing on television.
Special guest star, Keys Alexander, everybody.
My sister, ladies and gentlemen.
Bravo.
And, and quite a thing on television. It was self-aware and ironic and full of blood and guts and entrails and drugs and nudity and passive references to nudity. Joe Camel, I'm talking to you.
It was not for the kids, even though it looked like it was for the
no.
kids.
No!
Oh, damn well wasn't.
No, it was not for it was not for the kids.
Well, you know what is for the kids?
Oh, I know, Mike. The internets. Oh, wait, that's next week. I'm sorry.
Well, the internet, sort of. More specifically, our website, www.itwasathingontv.com. We have all our past episodes. We're almost at 50 episodes, guys. We have a vast library. I mean, especially nowadays with all the quarantine and isolation, there's got to be like 40 hours of episodes you can listen to there. And probably of those 40 hours, there's probably at least 2 or 3 good hours in that batch.
And I have a feeling that we have another good hour coming up. But okay, I'm looking at the notes for the next episode, and I don't get any of it.
No, I don't either. Where'd you find this, Mike? This is something else.
We'll talk about it later. Let's just wrap up this episode. As always, yeah, please subscribe, like us, rate and review us. We love seeing good reviews on Apple Podcasts and different websites. And please don't forget about sharing, because
sharing is caring.
Unless you're talking about a venereal disease, absolutely.
Oh, jeez.
It sort of fits in with the theme of TV Funhouse.
Well, especially Joe Camel. Do not Google that, by the way.
Yeah.
I will not be held responsible for that.
Yeah, that's definitely not for the kids. And
Or don't Google Screwpa.
Oh, jeez.
Or Romancing the Bone.
File this whole ending under do not do this awesomely cool thing.
Yeah, file this under the screen grab of Noel Edmonds talking to a goose saying, don't do this again.
Don't do this again.
So until later this week, when we'll have that new episode, Thank you, Chico, as always, and thank you, Greg. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe we survived this. I'm Mike. We'll talk to you later with another installment of It Was a Thing on TV.
Night, night.
Row! Screw Paul!